If you're coming from Aiken, you're going to take the Whiskey Road entrance into those hotels. If you're coming from the other direction, you're probably going to take the Stratford Hall entrance into them, but so you won't have to cross Whiskey Road traffic without a signal. But having that traffic dispersed like that, I think, is very important. Having interconnectivity between Hotel One, between the Holiday Inn Express and the Staybridge Hotel, and if it's a compatible use coming in next to it, say, for example, a family dining restaurant, again, interconnectivity, it amounts to the same thing as a road, but it doesn't cost anybody $1 million. You can go from one place to the other, and then right on down until you get to that other Whiskey Road entrance, which could possibly one day be signalized, particularly if something happens to the property across the street. So that's the kind of thing that we've been, and I'd be glad to show you, Mr. Dwar, what sort of a drawing of what we had talked with the city's previous city manager and planning staff.
Thank you, sir.
Larry, I think that'd be good to give copies to all of the council members, if you would.
Okay, sure.
I tell you what, I do have a concern about some of the things that have been said tonight, and that's one of them, the traffic, and also the frontage road, and especially when we look at what's going to go there before. I mean, after. So I think that's a major thing that we need to get, you know, talk about and see what can be done. What's the best we can do? Anyway, anybody else want to say anything? Okay, we got a motion and a second. Show of hands, please. All in favor? On first reading, let's see. One, two, three. Okay, four. Five. Okay, opposed? One. Okay, passes 5-1. Okay, thank you. Thank you, everybody, for...
Thank you. It was an excellent presentation.
...and your comments and
we'll have second reading, Mayor, on October 8th.
Okay, we've got another item. Item 4, first reading of an ordinance to annex property at 486 Jehosi Drive into the Aiken city limits. Mr. Pierce.
Thank you, Mayor. The title of the ordinance is an ordinance to annex to the corporate limits of the city of Aiken certain property consisting of 0.31 acres of land, more or less, owned by Habitat for Humanity, and to zone the same residential single family RSA. That means the lot would need to be 8,000 square feet. Habitat for Humanity owns this lot. They have asked to annex it into the city of Aiken. It is contiguous to our city limits. The Planning Commission also reviewed this application at their meeting on September 11 and have unanimously recommended that the city do, in fact, annex it into the city limits for the city of Aiken. So for consideration on first reading is the ordinance to annex property at 486 Jehosi Drive into the Aiken city limits owned by Habitat for Humanity.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
Mr. Mayor.
So moved.
Seconds.
Who is first?
Second.
Okay, discussion?
We have a little first.
Show of hands. For in favor. Okay, passes unanimously.
Okay. Mayor, just a couple of things to put in the record. I did pass out a copy of an article that appeared in the Recreational Professionals magazine at the statewide publication upon the Railroad Depot, and it's the work that has been done there. And then when council arrived tonight, we also have the annual report for this past fiscal year available for council.
Very good, very good. Okay, we are dismissed. Thank you, staff members. 1-2. We're still here.
Stuart.
Great, Count Stuart.
Well, this property we just...
with us this evening. We've got an exciting agenda, and appreciate your input as we go through our agenda. If you'd like to speak, and I'm sure there are many of you that would like to speak this evening, you may certainly do so by coming to the microphone and just giving your name. And if you would, please, try to keep your comments to 5 minutes or less so that everyone will have a chance that wants to speak. And we appreciate that very much. Well, as we get started, we'll have a council's prayer and a pledge of allegiance to our flag.
Our Father and our God, as we turn our hearts and our heads toward you this evening, we come to you with thanksgiving in our hearts for your love, for your goodness, for your mercy, for your grace. Father, for life, for liberty that we enjoy in this great nation. Father, we pray your hand of protection upon it, upon our military that may be serving in harm's way. We pray your blessings upon this meeting this evening, upon these citizens who are willing to participate in our form of government. Be with us as a council tonight as we deliberate these issues. Give us clearness of mind. Help us to do what's in the best interest of our city and our citizens. May tonight you receive honor and glory from what is accomplished. And we ask these things in your name. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First item of business this evening is the minutes from my last meeting. Do we have a motion and a second for approval of minutes of September 10th, 2012?
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to make a motion that we approve them as written.
I second.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. We're fortunate this evening to have a presentation from public safety, and I think it'd be enlightening for all of us. Mr. Pierce, would you like to introduce it?
Thank you very much, Mayor. Of course, back in December, we had the tragic loss of one of our public safety officers, Scotty Richardson, and that was a definite shock to our system. And as we were going through the various memorial services for Scotty, we had an opportunity to meet with someone from North Carolina who worked with the High Point, North Carolina Police Department. And he was sharing with us a program that High Point has engaged in to help address crime in their community. And lo and behold, before we could schedule a trip up there, then we lost Sandy Rogers as well. And I think all of us have grieved through these terrible, tragic losses, Mayor, and we've had other violence in our community that has legitimately caused us a great deal of concern. So the question after the grieving and those ceremonies was, what's our next step? And that's when we went out with our Food for Thoughts campaign in the late spring to hear from our citizens. And I have to say again publicly how touched public safety has been by a tremendous outpouring of care and concern for our folks in uniform who are on our streets every day. We've discovered from our Food for Thoughts results we had over 235 surveys that were turned back in to us. Over 300 people attended those two events, that the community definitely wanted to help in the effort. So Chief Baranco and I traveled to High Point, North Carolina, and met with Chief Sumner and met with his major and heard about their Safe Communities Initiative. This is a program that is nationwide. It has been very successful, And Chief Branko and I had a wonderful trip back discussing possibilities for Aiken and what Aiken may be able to use from this national model here to help us, along with our citizens, combat crime in our community. So without any further ado, I'd like for Chief Branko to introduce some special guests with us here tonight who had just returned last week from a visit to High Point as well.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Good evening, everyone. Mayor, Council, Mr. Pierce, citizens. I am Charles Branko with Aiken Department of Public Safety, and we're really excited to be here today to talk about the Safer Community. Mr. Pierce, as he said, and I traveled to High Point, North Carolina recently and talked with Chief Sumner and his staff about some healthy choices that are being made within their community. We were impressed that although there's a lot of hard work, it's a simple philosophy. In March, we placed our Aiken Public Safety Community patrols back in some of our neighborhoods as a department-wide community policing philosophy. This initiative that we have learned about in High Point appears to be the next logical step in the community policing process. So with that, we sent Lieutenant Ben Harm, Community Services Coordinator Cynthia Mitchell, Lieutenant Carl Odenthal to High Point to learn more about this initiative, and they're here to tell you a little bit about their trip today. Ben?
Thank you, Chief. All right. First of all, I'd like to say thank you for letting us present to you tonight. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Lieutenant Ben Harm. I work for Aiken Department of Public Safety. And I'd like to discuss to you a little bit about the data part of this process. And the map you see up there is just kind of an example of a crime map with no particular data shown. The process that we're talking about tonight is really data-driven, which really incorporates a lot of my personal experiences into this philosophy. One of the reasons why this philosophy is so interesting and exciting for me is because it relates basically what I've seen over the, my many years in law enforcement. I've personally tried to solve crime in an area by arresting people, and while that might have solved the issue that night, it doesn't solve the issue of crime long term because we're not addressing the underlying issues that cause the criminal behavior. This process we're discussing tonight directly involves and relates the community in the participant selection process and the healing process for the community. Now the data part comes into the process by identifying a select number of offenders based on their criminal histories and their documented contacts with law enforcement. These are based on identifiable contacts and histories, and based on those alone. The offenders are presented with a clear choice offered by both law enforcement and the community, standing together in unison. And the community is a very vital part of this process.
Good evening. My name is Cynthia Mitchell. I am the Community Services Coordinator for Aiken Department of Public Safety. As Lieutenant Harm just stated, the entire community, including faith groups, schools, businesses, civic groups, families, and the offenders themselves, are a part of this process. Every bit of community is actively and positively engaged throughout the entire process. This only helps build a relationship with community, law enforcement, but it also helps with the accurate and timely distribution of information within the communities. I was able to witness firsthand how well this community component of this model can and does work. During our tour to High Point, I was visiting their community advocate's office. While there, a prostitute walked in right off the street, and she was crying uncontrollably. She was able to gather herself, and through her tears, she just looked around and said, "I hear y'all help people here." Immediately, I saw this process spring into action. The faith community, their substance abuse center, the clothes closet, immediately, as soon as this person walked in, the response was immediate. The faith community, someone immediately began to pray with her. One person got on the phone and called the Substance Abuse Center to alert them of her arrival. Another person got on another phone to contact the local clothes closet to try and help her find some more appropriate attire. As I watched this entire process, I realized we have every single piece of that community component right here in Aiken, and then some. Nothing has to be created. It all just needs to be tied together. I don't know how long this young lady had been on the street or if she will eventually return. I do know when she made the choice, when she decided that she wanted to make a healthy choice, the community was there to support her and help her heal, and in turn, help heal a part of itself. The city of Aiken already has so many of these community connections in place, like our partnership with USC Aiken, our friends in the business community, this series of Food for Thoughts, and our Citizens Public Safety Academy. This model is particularly exciting to me because it allows room for us to grow, and it affords the city of Aiken, public safety, and our community at large to continue doing what we already do, and that is working together to create and sustain safer communities. Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Lieutenant Carl Lodenthal, and I too work with public safety. And like Ben and Cynthia, I was pleased with my experience in High Point, North Carolina. I was pleased because I know the initiative that High Point began 15 years ago is very similar in nature to Public Safety's PAC team. In 1994, when Public Safety began its PAC team, I was fortunate enough to work with both Ms. Price and Ms. Diggs on different projects. So I know at least part of the council is pretty familiar with that process and how involved that can be with the community. After leaving lunch with the High Point officers in North Carolina, I asked the assistant chief to take me through some of their neighborhoods. I just wanted to see what they had. I was surprised to see a command level officer having the intimate knowledge of the neighborhoods we toured. A prostitute approached a customer right in front of us. It was 12:30 in the middle of the day. We were driving down a patrol car, goes right in front of us. So we went ahead and approached the van and asked the driver, asked him, who's getting into your car? He goes, I don't know. And so as soon as he said that, the prostitute comes running around the front and comes talking to the assistant chief and says, did they call my name in court today? He says, yeah, they called it twice. So I better get up there. So she takes off running, trying to get back to court so she doesn't have to go to jail. Now, why did I choose the doorway? Why did I choose this visual image to match my experience at High Point? The doorway and the bricks behind it reflect the progress and growth of the city of Aiken. For those of you who don't know, it's right behind this window here. And each of those lines of bricks indicate and have a little placard there that indicate growth of the city. 1884, City Hall. 1906, City Police. And it goes to 38 or something right at the doorway. So it reflects the growth of the city. Well, why did I show this? I show that because we started with the PAC team of community policing in 1994. This is the next logical step. This is the next progression, the next step to where we need to go, is incorporating these ideas from High Point, North Carolina. And it's also used across the country. High Point's just one of the areas that's closest that's really been a mentor and a model for us. The challenge for many, many agencies is sustaining this process. As Cynthia mentioned, the key lies in the community of Aiken. And I want to leave you with this image right here. Aiken and its many components empty into the same stream. We've got all kinds of different things, different groups, different faith-based groups, people that want to be involved, but we all empty into the same thing. We've got the same goal. We're going into the same stream. And it is the vested community of Aiken, in partnership with public safety, that's going to sustain this initiative. I'm going to turn it back over to the chief.
Thank you, Carl, Ben, and Cynthia. You can see the energy that they've experienced, and I just wanted to sum it up with this, is that we may not have all of the details worked out. We believe that this model, with the support of council and our community, that we can make a positive difference in Aiken. We've invited High Point Police Chief and some of his staff members, along with some community leaders, to come to Aiken to share more about their proven methods that cut their crime rate 50% over a 15-year period of time. I must add that their population also doubled during that time. This will be held October 11th at 1 p.m. at Odell Weeks, which is 1700 Whiskey Road, and that evening at 6:30 p.m. at Friendship Baptist Church, located at 515 Richland Avenue East. And we hope to see everybody there. And thank you for your time.
Charles, thank you on behalf of council here. There may be some questions or comments, and that's fine. Thank your team behind you, too, for what you're doing, and we look forward to working with you just as close as we possibly can. You know that,
yes.
And we will. Are there any comments?
Yes, I have one. The first time I heard about this program, I thought it was just sounded too good to be true. So I went a step farther and contacted some people I know in High Point, North Carolina, my in-laws. And I have nieces and nephews there. And just asked them, didn't tell them that I had heard anything about it, just asked a few questions. And they actually made the same comments that you just made, you and Cynthia and Carl and Ben. They said it brought the community together. The community is now sharing the responsibility. They see it as police and community working together. And not just every now and then, but every day. They also said that it built trust between police and the community. And they also said that it was a holistic approach, because they didn't just reach the person who may have been a criminal, but the entire family. Because the church was involved, the community, other nonprofit organizations became a part of it, and most importantly, the police. So I'd like to thank y'all for going down, finding out as much information as you can, and bringing it back. And I can't wait to hear more about the program when they get here.
Thank you.
October the 11th. Thank you so much for everything that you do.
Chief, what kind of crime are we worried about? Are we trying to reduce? Other than generically, we want all crime to be reduced. But what are you focusing on with this program?
Sure. Here recently, we've had some high-profile violent crime. And violent crime, in our belief, should be the focus.
But your violent crimes are in a downswing, according... I've got four or five reports that you've given, but from what I've read, violent crime has improved. I don't know whether that's a reaction to what we went through, and people saying, I better not do that because bad things are going to happen. But in fact, looking at the monthly activities report, I mean, we're trending very well on crime in the city of Aiken.
Yes, sir. I think that may lend to our community patrols making an impact in our neighborhoods already. But I also think that, you know, you sometimes if we have a shooting call, you may not have a suspect, you may not have a resolution to it, or somebody with any information. So I think with this holistic approach, as Ms. Diggs said, I think we'll be able to focus on that and maybe and make a difference in the things that people at home are concerned about.
One thing that we did discuss, too, with the High Point staff and the volunteers is the fact that there's such a small population in a community that commits the majority of the crimes. 3% of the offenders are really doing about 75% of the crime. So with a focused, targeted effort on the folks that are committing the bulk of the crime, immediately the streets have gone quiet in other locations.
But High Point is also a much larger city than Aiken, and they were focusing on violent crime. As were most of the communities in the book that we were given. How specifically would you see your staff working with this program? How many people are going to be involved in it?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, it's a department-wide philosophy. You're not going to have any one person totally dedicated. It's going to help with the information sharing. It's going to really bring the department together to try to work more efficiently to be able to identify these people that need to be identified, and then to monitor them. Not only does that, it's not going to take away from the job that they're already doing, I think it's going to give us some resources if we, you know, have that type of crime in a certain neighborhood, it may give us some leads.
But are you focusing on specific crimes? Are you going to worry about breaking and entering? Or
we're focused on specific offenders. They may commit a myriad of crimes. It could be property crimes. Okay. It could be violent crimes.
Well,
that's the focus, not a particular category of crime. The whole idea with safe communities is to find out who's stirring up the pot and sending a very clear message that that past conduct will not be tolerated in the future. And that's why it involves city officials for sure, certainly the court officials, judges, prosecutors, law enforcement, and community volunteers who send a very clear message to these offenders that this is just not the place to commit crime.
Well, okay, but where it's been tried, as outlined in that book, the focus was on major crimes. It was in Boston, in Los Angeles. It was violent crime. And I mean, obviously, we're going to support the program. We're going to do it. But I hope it doesn't diminish response times. I hope it doesn't take away from activities that will, in fact, close cases, because our closure rate needs improvement. We're on the right track. I think you might be cutting short community service. They're doing a wonderful job. As I expressed to you, my concern about the increased response times on the south side, from 4 minutes in the rest of the city to 6 minutes on the south side, that's a concern that I have, and I certainly want to make sure we don't detract from that, because we have a great reputation in the city, and I, quite frankly, would defend the city. I think we've always been with you. I hope that nothing improved as a result of what we went through in terms of the reputation of your department or the support that you received from the city. I think the city has always been behind public safety. So, I mean, obviously, we're going to do this. I wish we'd have had some more discussions beforehand, but.
Well, the meeting on October 11 is a chance for the citizens and council to hear a lot more detail about this safe communities approach. And certainly the concerns that are being expressed in the room tonight are concerns we had before we went up there. And we specifically had the conversation with Chief Sumner. And he said with the reduction in crime, in fact, that frees up the officers to spend more time on each case to more thoroughly investigate and follow up leads, because there's not a crushing load of cases, there's a manageable load of cases. So the potential return is great, and that's why after our conversations with the staff and their offer to mentor us, they kind of sought us out. We didn't seek them out, and then they offered to mentor us. It just seemed like a good opportunity to at least how successful they were. Their metropolitan area is about 100,000. They were a community of about 50,000. We're a community of about 29,000, but within 5 miles of where we sit tonight, we have about 60,000 to 70,000 people. So there are some similarities. There are some distinct differences. But the potential for a good return and a good result was something we just felt we wanted to bring to council tonight, and certainly let the community know that on October 11, you can hear it directly from the folks in High Point to see what's worked for them.
So we should expect then improved solve rates and lesser crime.
Yes,
the program
sir.
Works, even though you're focusing on a small number of people?
Right. We're focusing on the small number of people that are doing the majority of the crimes. And they found during their process, and it is a process, that in the focus on violent crime, it actually brought the overall crime rate down.
Chief, thanks for the presentation. It's very good. The only skepticism I have is, you say you're not going to need additional resources and so forth, but in case you do, don't hesitate to call on the council, because I think everybody is back in this program.
Thank you very much.
I think I've got my facts right. This is a confluence of really three cities that meet at the county line or something? Or am I in the wrong
High
point?
High Point's in four counties.
It's now four counties that come together, and High Point's in four counties.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume that you travel all the four counties. You saw similar neighborhoods to what we have in our area here in North Augusta in the county. Did y'all make a pretty good tour of the area, or what did y'all do?
I don't know that we went into every single county. However, Mr. Pierce and I spent a lot of time on the road driving around and saw similar communities that we have here in Aiken.
At this point, and obviously they had four counties to pull together, so you got, four North Carolina counties. We have one county and several cities. Obviously, you worked in the sheriff's department for a number of years. Do you think you can get them roped into this, so to speak?
Sheriff Hunt and I have had several conversations about it. He is very supportive of the program and interested to see what High Point has to say on the 11th.
How about Interstate 20 and with the state police? Because obviously that's a corridor that runs from Atlanta and the Gulf Coast.
We're already doing some things with our local jurisdictions and state jurisdictions around Aiken. And of course, we just want that to grow.
Okay. Thank you.
October 11th at Oakdale Weeks at what time?
At 1 o'clock.
And later that same day?
6:30 at Friendship Baptist Church.
Okay. Thank you.
Charles, thank you. Thank you and thank your team there with you and thank the whole group.
6:30?
The whole public safety group. We appreciate what you do. You're very professional. You've recently earned the Excellence Award, which is, I think, only 3 or 4 in the state, 47 in the nation, and that's quite an honor. I've got 3 thoughts here. I know that we went through a rash of car break-ins. Now, this is something that, and everybody knows this, but it's something that we all can help. We can keep our eyes and our ears open when we're out in the public and around folks. And if we see anything that looks suspect, we can call public safety quickly. I had a call from a friend in a business, about a month ago now, and she was calling me because they had a client that had shown that he might be trouble to them, and the person was coming back the next day, and she wanted to know what we could do. And I said, well, the first thing you should do ever is call public safety, you know. Oh, well, I didn't want to bother public safety. Well, and that's a true story. And I said, you're not bothering them. You're really helping them. You're helping us as a community. So she did that, and right away a public safety officer was out of her business, and there was no problem the next day after all, but she was very concerned about that. And so and the other thing is, it seems to me that you've got somewhat of a fast start on this with our 6 community groups that we have in the 6 communities already established, and many of them have been established for several years. So that's a good starting place, isn't it?
It is.
I would think so. So again, thank you very much. And as it's been said, we'll work with you in any way we can, every way we can.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you for being here. Business. First item is the appointments and discussion of appointees to the city boards, commissions, and committees. Mr. Pierce, please.
Mayor, thank you very much. There are 5 appointments for council's consideration tonight. We have 12 pending appointments to fill vacancies. The 5 tonight, Mayor, you've recommended Eugene Mackey to the Community Development Committee. That term would expire September 2nd, 2014. Councilmember DeWar has recommended Don Barnes to the General Aviation Commission. That term would expire September 1, 2014. Councilmember Ebner recommended the appointment of Judy Sennett to Community Development Committee. That term would run through September 2, 2014. And Councilmember Homoki has recommended Alton Johnson be reappointed to the Community Development Committee. That would run through September 2, 2014. He's also recommended Stephen Peterson to the General Aviation Commission for a term that would run through September 1, 2014. So for council's consideration of these 5 appointments.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Mr. Mayor, I move we approve the appointments as recommended.
Okay, do we have a second? We have a second? Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay, how about nominations for other vacancies that there may be?
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to make a recommendation to reappoint Susie Haslip to the Recreation Commission, please.
Okay. Any others? Okay, if not, that will be on the agenda for the next meeting. Okay, thank you. Item 2, the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance amending a zoning ordinance regarding indoor shooting ranges to require special exception approval in limited commercial districts. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. This is second reading of an ordinance. The title of the ordinance is an ordinance amending our zoning ordinance regarding indoor shooting ranges to require special exception approval in listed commercial districts. On page 47 of your materials, and I think, I know that Ms. Rideout has put that exhibit up there. The only issue for determination by City Council tonight, is the amendment to the zoning ordinance. This is the ordinance in general as it would apply to the different commercial zones to include office, general business, planned commercial, downtown business, limited industrial, limited manufacturing. And in those zones, it would require special exception review of any application to place a indoor firing range at a location in that district. Tomorrow night at 5:30, the Board of Zoning Appeals is going to consider a firing range at a particular location within the city. That's tomorrow night. But tonight is just to amend the ordinance. Specifically, in those commercial zones, we had some disparity. In some, there would have been a public hearing, like the one that's going to be tomorrow night. And then in other zones, literally, the business owner could have just opened up as long as they had a business license and any licenses from the SLED or state authorities. So based on the comments that we've heard at our previous public hearings on other ordinances, this zoning ordinance amendment was proposed to require a public hearing for any indoor range operation. You also have at your space tonight, when you sat down at your desk, the Planning Commission minutes for the discussion and then the vote. Council at first reading at your last meeting on September 10 referred this ordinance to the Planning Commission for their review. They have reviewed the proposed amendments and voted unanimously 6-0 to recommend that the indoor firing range be added to the list of uses and that requires special exception approval. That is a public hearing before the Board of Zoning Appeals in every instance. So for council consideration tonight would be a second reading of this ordinance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Do we have a motion and a second to approve this?
Well, is it possible for some of the residents of District 1 to speak out?
Oh, everybody's going to get a chance to speak, but we need to get it to that point, if it's okay. Do we have a motion and a second?
I do. I move the amending our zoning ordinance regarding indoor shooting ranges to require special exception approval in listed commercial districts.
I'll second.
Okay, very good. Okay. Do we have citizens that would like to speak on this subject? Okay.
Mr. Mayor and to the council, I want to make sure that I understand.
Okay, give us your name just for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Please.
I'm sorry. I'm Maddie Tolliver. I live at 507 Williamsburg Street Northeast here in Aiken, about two streets over from Gilbert Street. And my question to the council is, if you could just kind of explain what all this entails, this zoning for the indoor shooting range. I want to make sure that we understand exactly what it is that's going to be a part of our neighborhood.
Okay. Go ahead. What we were talking about, Ms. Tolliver, is we have a zoning ordinance, and an indoor firing range is only permitted in a commercially zoned property. So they would not be allowed in a residential area. The property would have to have one of those commercial zones that I talked about, like downtown business, light industrial, light manufacturing, so forth. And what this means is if somebody wanted to open up that business, they couldn't just do it. They would have to file an application in the planning department, and it's called a special exception approval. And there are 11 criteria Board of Zoning Appeals is required to look at. So the person who wanted to run the business would come to this room at BZA. They meet on Tuesday nights, the last Tuesday of the month. And the owner would be standing where you are and talk about, this is the business we're going to run. And then the members of the board have to think about things like, you know, is that an appropriate at that location? Will there be noise issues, traffic issues? There are 11 different things that they look at, and we actually had a list of those on the table. I don't know if you saw that coming in.
I did not get a copy. Okay. That's why I wanted to make
sure. Yes, ma'am,
and
certainly if you want to let the city clerk know where we could send that to you,
right.
If we could email it or just mail it to you, there are these 11 criteria, and there are things like, does it meet the comprehensive plan? Does it fit within the character and purpose statement? Is it a size, shape, and character best for that particular piece of property? Would there be a lot of vehicle traffic? Is it hazardous, detrimental, disturbing to surrounding land uses? Is it consistent with existing traffic plans? Does it have sufficient public services? Does it adversely affect any site that's a historical, cultural, natural, or scenic? Does it conform with other requirements in the plan? And the last one's really kind of a catch-all. Mm-hmm. It talks about that the proposed use would not be contrary to the public health, safety, and welfare. And it's more detailed than that. But the point is that board has to look at that list of 11 items, and that applicant, the person who wants to open that business, has to prove to them that they meet all those 11 requirements. And even if they prove that, the board can put conditions on the use. So by state law, as our city attorneys advised us at the other meeting, that applicant has to meet each and every one of those, not just 5 of 11 or 10 of 11, all 11. And even then, the board can put conditions on the use in addition to that as well.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, because it is a part of the agenda tonight, make one think that there is a person that has already applied for this.
Yes.
And there is a person that's interested in doing this. This is not just a hypothetical thing. This is something that is already in the making. And the concerned citizen of the neighborhood would like to know, how do we voice our opinion of objection to this going?
Excellent, excellent question. And again, the person that's going to this location on Beaufort Street, right there at Willow Run, in the metal building there, that was already zoned to require a special exception approval. So they have made that application. That'll be heard tomorrow night in this room at 5:30. And that's absolutely the time for the residents to come in, and you will be afforded the opportunity to come to the microphone. Everybody who attends should be given an opportunity to come to that microphone and voice your concerns and to ask questions about that proposed use.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
This is really a protection for the citizens that we didn't have before.
Okay.
So it's another layer of protection, if you will.
Well, that
they have to have this, and the citizens have the opportunity to come again.
You know, sometimes we kind of get the idea that every time we come here, something to object, and we don't want the council to feel like we just object to everything, but every once in a while we'd like to think that there would be something that came in our community that would enhance it, that would really bring something, you know, stores, something that would kind of give us a few jobs for our young people, that kind of thing, not something that's going to just be there, big box, possibly noise. You know, we kind of want somebody to be looking out for our interests on the north side, something that will help us. This is what it's all about. Thank
you
so much.
We certainly hope we're doing that for you.
Thank you.
Is anyone else would like to speak on this issue?
Yes, sir. My name is Willa Hightower. I live at 682 Edger Street, Aiken, Aiken County, Aiken City, I might say. I just come to make 2 points, and I'm given to understand this evening that perhaps my comments are not to be made at this time, but I just want to put this on the table. I have 2 concerns with the firing range, and one concern is health, and I'm concerned about what will happen to the dust that will be created when you fire a weapon. And second, what will happen to the lead that will be in that dust, as well as the lead that will end up expended? Those are the 2 issues I'm concerned with, and I just want to put that on the tape.
Okay. Thank you, Will.
And just for completeness of record, Mayor, that's exactly what the BZA should be looking at tomorrow night.
Okay. Anyone else like to speak? Yes, sir?
Good evening, Mayor and council members. I'm Richard Johnson, Jr. I reside at 428 Marion Street, Northeast. And one question. Will tomorrow night's meeting, will the decision at tomorrow night's meeting be final?
It would be
final. If it's approved or disapproved, will the decision of the board meeting tomorrow night be final? If they approve it, is that final, or does it come back to council?
It's final, Mr. Johnson. Any appeal would go to the common pleas court down to the courthouse, two blocks down.
Okay. Thank you.
But, Mr. Johnson, if I could, please. If someone were to come to the city today to open a indoor firing range, we do not have a special category for that to fall under right now. It would go to all other retail services. And then the planning department would look at that. And there are areas within our city where it is permitted by right. They would not have to go to the BZA to get a special exception.
Right.
So they would not, residents would not know, or other business owners would not know that firing range was potentially going to be located next door to them.
Right.
What we are trying to do is to place it so that the public is going to know anytime there's one opened up within the city, mm-hmm. and you have an opportunity to come and plead your case before the BZA.
Right.
So it's taking away those permitted rights and putting special exceptions in there for those places.
Okay.
If we were to not act on this piece of this ordinance tonight, it would not stop nor prevent this application in that location, because it is allowed as a special exception today, okay. just as this ordinance sits. I mean, just as the city ordinances are today.
Right. Okay.
So what we're trying to do is to make all of these places by special exception, so that the BZA will have to give approval, and our citizens will be able to give input into whether or not it can locate there.
Okay, that's fine. This seemed like a protection in there. I just wanted to know if the decision tomorrow, if that's final.
It would not come back to city council,
right.
but it could be challenged
right.
through the courts.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Ask for clarification, maybe the city attorney. Is there a period of time, say the BZA turns it down or whatever, is there a period of time that the applicant can reapply, or is it one and done?
He'd have to appeal.
Let's see, Mr. Evans is here. He could answer that.
Is there a 1-year limit, then he can come back, or is it a never?
I think that's
Mr.
right.
Mr. Evans is here. He can
appeal. I want Mr. Johnson to be sure and be aware of
sure.
if there is an exception.
Right. And as Mr. Evans is coming up, just for the benefit of the audience, anytime there's a special exception application, the property itself is posted with a notice that has the hearing date and time. and that has to be posted well in advance of the hearing so everyone knows about it. It's advertised in the paper. We put it on our website. Mr. Evans?
If the BZA declines or turns down an application, the applicant can come back after a year.
But it would be reposted again if a new application was filed.
Correct. And letters sent to contiguous property owners.
Yes, exactly right. They do send a letter out, right.
Thank you.
What about this? Okay. What about this? How much time do they have to
this decision? The notice goes out 20 days in advance of the BZA meeting.
So just under 3 weeks before the meeting. And the thing is, Mr. Johnson, the Board of Zoning Appeals typically meets that last Tuesday of the month. So that ad in the paper is in the week before, Ms. Ryder? You put the ad in, right? Yeah.
20 days.
20 days before, so that'll be in the paper.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Before Mr. Evans leaves, there may be another citizen first.
Okay. Anyone else?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Mayor, and to the council. I'm George L. Breithaupt, the proprietor of G.L. Breithaupt and Sons, and I know tomorrow night is the one that where the rubber will meet the road, but I just kind of like Mr. Hightower want to put some things out just for thought. One person said that we don't like to be seen as persons always coming to complain. It looked like that's the role that I have been thrust in for the last 5 years or so. And my recommendation is that whenever there is something that is going to dramatically affect adjoining properties, that we will not be expected to look for some type of sign saying that this is going to be discuss, but that we will have direct contact and direct, you will contact us directly because, Mayor, you were very much a party to what we went through when this area was set aside as industrial park or whatever. There was absolutely no communication with the people right in the particular area. In fact, I was victimized by the city administrator and his staff going by a deed on land that was made in 1919 when we had established our own deeds. They had been approved. We had paid taxes, city taxes and county taxes for the better portion of 20 years, and they came so close to me until they took four parking spaces of my parking lot that I had gotten permission from the city to build. So what I'm saying, and I thank you, Mayor, because you were very much instrumental in trying to bring parity to that particular situation, and I'm still grateful to you. And I appreciate the extent that you went because you were not aware that these things were happening. But I hope that council will put it into action and look at the process of informing adjoining properties other than just announcements of proceedings. Because you know, it's kind of like Cinderella's sister on ball night, and that's the way I kind of feel. I don't want to say stepchild because I don't want to discriminate against anybody, but I do feel like Cinderella's sister sometimes. Thank you.
Excuse me, did you not get a letter on this issue?
No, sir, I did not get a letter on the issue. Not prior to the other meeting. I've gotten quite a bit of communication since the meeting, I think, was on September 10th.
Yes.
Yeah, I was not made aware of that until the day of. by a council person.
Well, the main issue is tomorrow night. Have you received a letter?
Oh, yes. I'm okay. Very well aware of tomorrow.
Yeah. Okay.
Because yeah. A council person became very involved.
But you should have received the letter anyway.
That's right.
And your neighbors, I hope.
That's
okay.
Right.
All right.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, sir.
Right on. Is there anyone else that would like to speak on this issue? If not, it's back to council. We've got a motion and a second. Show of hands, please.
Question first.
Question. Go ahead.
I want. Obviously, the ordinance passes tonight. Can we be? I don't know if the word is legally correct or procedurally correct to have the paperwork signed and everything, so that this is a quasi-judicial ruling. So we want to be sure we have all the paperwork done before 5:30 tomorrow night.
This does not affect that application.
This doesn't
makes
affect
it uniform
at all.
Throughout the city.
Okay.
It, that zone where that particular location is, Mr. Ebner, is already requiring the special exception approval. We're just trying to bring everybody up.
So
to
this
that
really
same
has,
standard.
As we've said before, this really has nothing to do with tomorrow night then, or tomorrow afternoon.
What it has to do with it is we're bringing the other zoning districts up to the same standard.
Second procedural question. Is there any documents, and Mr. Brody is here, is there any documents from the Aiken Corporation that are required as part of this hearing as far as, you know, having a signed offer, which we have, I think, Mr. Brody, and then any other changes we've made to the Aiken Corp guidelines?
There was a change to the restrictive covenants for the industrial park.
Right. Is that part
that
of the
use.
Procedure? Is that separate
and
total?
It is. We provided a copy to planning.
And so they will have that
they have
information.
It. They do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments?
Well, first of all, go ahead and vote now.
Okay. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Approval?
I'd like to, for it to be on record. First of all, I'm really not in favor of this firing range. When I voted earlier, it was so that the city would be in compliance. The public safety officers that were using the facility on DuPont Drive. I did not want and still don't want an indoor firing range in my district. The residents of District 1 doesn't want it. But I see tonight it's like you're between a rock and a hard place. If I vote no, they can vote, they can go ahead and open this thing and do it their way. But if I vote yes, it protects the citizens or the residents in whatever area it's open because they have to comply with all 11 of these requirements. So a vote of yes would mean that we would be able to at least try and fight it. And hope that they would comply with these requirements. A vote of no mean they're going to do it their way. So I just want people in my district to understand that I'm not in favor of an indoor firing range, but I do want you to be able to be protected and be able to have a say in whether or not they meet this criteria.
Gail, does that mean you vote for it?
That means I vote.
Yeah.
Yes, for this amendment
right.
to the ordinance.
Right, for the issue tonight
right.
on the agenda.
That's what it means.
Okay, it passes then 6-0, I think.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. And, Gail, one remark you made, I just want to clarify.
Mm-hmm.
You said something about and let them go ahead and do whatever they want.
I mean,
there are restrictions. There's a noise. We have a noise code in this town, and they've got to abide by that. So that's just one thing that everybody ought to be aware of, too, that they can't be too noisy, more noisy than anyone else to be in concert with the noise ordinance. Okay, moving to new business, approval of the airport layout plan for submission to the Federal Aviation Administration for their review and approval. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Our engineering and utility department director, Larry Morris, has worked with our consultant and engineering firm on a layout plan for our airport operation. Mrs. Rideout has put page 52 up. for your view. We also had a larger copy for council's reference. This just shows the existing and potential future development at the airport as part of the grant money that we've received, as well as ongoing funds we receive from various sources, including the operations at the airport, including the grant money that the State Aeronautics Commission has shared with us. We are required to have this airport layout plan. Mr. Morris is here and in the room. Our understanding is that we need to have the local governing body, that means city council's approval of the layout plan, so that we can then submit that to the FAA for their approval. There's nothing in this document that prevents us from amending the plan at a future date. This is just the existing facility and potential areas for future development, which we have discussed in the past. And so for council consideration tonight would be approval of this airport layout plan for submission to the FAA.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
I'll move.
Okay. We've got a first. We've got a
second.
Okay. All right. Any discussion?
Yeah, I have a couple. Go ahead, Reggie. Just a couple general questions. This still leaves it open for a private citizen to build a hangar on, and of course, it's the property of the city, but a private person can build a hangar?
Yes, that would take an approval process and a presentation to our aviation commission. I've had an opportunity. We did have a citizen who has expressed that desire, and I've had an opportunity to give him that his plan. So they have that to look at. And you'll see in there on the page 52, and then, of course, in that larger document, there's a designated area for future development, potential future development. It's the second page in the larger version
I
gave you on the right-hand side about halfway up. So that does actually facilitate that. And, in fact, they couldn't put the hangar there without the layout plan being in place. And once the specific project is described and specified, we have to submit that to FAA for approval as well.
And then if this private citizen, and I think some of the other hangars, if a private citizen had five spots there, he could rent them to other people in that hangar as a private citizen. If he builds a hangar for 11 planes, can he rent the others?
I don't know that we've had that particular scenario, have we, Larry?
If I can address that, Councilman Ebner, the barn hangars are on the leased area, and I believe that's what you're referring to. They are roughly 10,000 square feet each, and, of course, more than one aircraft can be placed in those. Our fixed-base operator, Mr. Mike Laver, Aiken Aviation Enterprises, does manage one of those barn hangars. Then there are private corporations, not necessarily private citizens, but private corporations that did come, got approval through council, approval through FAA, and then constructed those hangars. There are no private T hangars up there, which would be for smaller aircraft. The city owns the northernmost T hangar. It's designated number one. Then the other T hangars that are there, designated 10, 11, and 12, one was constructed by Mr. Labor, and two were in existence prior to his taking over as FBO. He does manage all four T-hangers.
The question, Larry, was whether a private citizen had built a hangar and then was then leasing that out to other pilots. I'm not aware of that.
No, sir. Only corporations up there.
Why?
Sir?
Why?
No one has approached us. It is very expensive to build a hangar such as that because the FAA will require, as will the Airport Commission and, of course, Council, that the person who does that bear all of the cost of any stub taxiways or ramp space.
But if an individual wanted to do it, they could.
It could certainly be considered. It just hasn't been done yet.
Yeah.
Right.
So what you're saying is, and I'm looking at this big page, is that... 1, 10, 11, and 12 are the hangars that Mike Laver owns?
He actually constructed 12.
Constructed.
10 and 11 were there previously and are managed by him.
Okay.
And then 1 is owned by the city of Aiken but also managed by Mr. Laver.
So what are D1, A5, A4, and A3?
B1,
2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. Okay, you're at A. Okay, those are future T-hangers. A3, 4, 5, yeah. And D1 are future T-hangers.
Could be.
They could be constructed. Whoever wanted to come in and approach council with that would be required to get council approval as well as FAA approval.
So the process is then if a company or a person wants to build, are those the only size hangers that they could build? Could they build a smaller one like number 4 or number 7, number 8?
No, sir. We have other spots that are available for other style hangers. These are T-hangers.
Okay.
And that's part of our ALP, the airport layout plan, is to concentrate aircraft in certain positions. Obviously, with a large jet such as a G5, which is about a 70,000-pound jet, we don't want them with small Piper Cub-type planes.
But is there a space for a single engine or single aircraft parking?
Yes, sir. If you will look on page 2 of the larger sheets, I believe that's the page that's up there. Yes, sir, it is. But if you look, it's on the larger print. If you look at the very bottom of the page, you see an area B.
Yes.
And we have B2, B3, B4.
Yeah.
Those are barn hangers. And then the C hangers are slightly smaller than those.
Okay.
So that you could get a single aircraft in those, a larger.
Are they built now, or are they places which could be built?
Could be built.
Could be built.
This is strictly the plan.
Okay.
So and if you look north of that too, Mr. Dewar, there's a dashed line outline there, and it says reserved for long-term aviation-related development. So that doesn't even have a specific building there. So there's several spaces or areas at the airport for future development.
Correct.
So the process is that somebody would go to the General Aviation Commission, and do they have criteria for approval?
The General Aviation Commission will be guided by the airport layout plan.
Okay.
Is what is the document that they normally follow.
So,
and they will review any application before making a recommendation to council to make sure that the hangar that's proposed will match other hangars at the airport.
Okay, and then it would come to council, and
yes,
then
sir.
If council approved it, it would go to the FAA.
It would then go to the FAA for final approval.
Wow.
All right.
They must be pretty busy. Thank you.
My question. So either private citizen / corporation could request to build a T-hanger, suppose, and then can he rent to others, this private citizen?
That would be something that would have to come before council. FAA requires any structure out there to be revenue-producing for the airport. So if a private citizen wanted to construct T-hangers, they would then have to negotiate with council for an equitable rental rate, not only for the ground, but for the T-hangers themselves.
And we would have to look at the, we'd have to look again at the FBO lease agreement that we have in place, because there is a requirement under that lease agreement that council wouldn't enter into any contract that would unfairly prejudice
unfairly,
the FBO
operation. So if you charge the same rates, would not be unfair.
Again, we'd have to look at it based on the particular
situation. Yeah, we're not getting revenue from those now.
We're getting revenue from the ones that we own.
Right. That's right.
The others, we're getting the rental rate as per the lease agreement, and we're getting a fuel flowage fee. And what we see from based aircraft normally is that a based aircraft will fuel at this airport, and that's where we make the majority of our
revenue. I didn't get the impression on our review that we, because of the finances of the FBO, that we were getting any revenue out of any of those hangars, but
the city-owned hangars, we are.
The city-owned hangars,
yes.
But you mentioned that if somebody else wanted to build one, that they would have to generate revenue for the airport.
Correct.
We're not getting revenue from the airport for the ones we have.
Well, we're getting the fuel flowage fee.
I got a question here.
Yes, sir.
How come the hangar fees have gone up, but the 5 cents per gallon hadn't gone up in 10 years?
We're regulated on... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'll be glad to answer that. It's because the rate was not renegotiated. There's a period of time through the contract where it'll be renegotiated. The next opportunity will be in 2014. It's every 5 years.
Yes, but when was the hangar rates renegotiated?
I'm not sure that they were renegotiated, but there's opportunity in 2014.
Well, that's kind of like my point. If the FBO can unilaterally change things, why can't we change unilaterally? And I know
well,
Dick
well, it's not unilateral. This. I mean, we could have a discussion. The fuel flow rate is the agreement the council approved, so the next opportunity to negotiate that will be in 2014.
We could have had an opportunity to have done it a couple of years ago, but it didn't come to council. It was apparently made by somebody, but it didn't come to council, and as far as I'm concerned, it should have. Because I'm with you.
2009.
Oh, yeah, now we're stuck with it for 5 years.
2014, that's
yep. Right. All right, now. I hope you'll provide a guarantee that it'll come to council in 2014.
All right, but be sure my brain is working in the same path as everybody's. So a private citizen / corporation could petition the appropriate people to build a building.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and then if it didn't violate the, and far as I remember, I read it a couple of times, the contract with him, there's only one clause in there that says you can't undercut him, if you will, on price. So if he rented it at the same price to other people, would should make him legal. Should, I said.
Well, we just have to look at it yep. At the time the offer's made.
Also, there's a public access to a waiting list out there. I assume he could have access to that list and call plane owners or advertise or whatever to rent the rest of the space in his hangar.
I'm not sure who owns
that
list.
Huh?
I'm not sure who owns that list.
Yeah, the FBO would have that list.
That's public access property, though, is it not?
I mean, the FBO may be managing this list as part of his private management of the airport. I don't know about the list.
Okay. All right. Very good. Thank you.
Well, when Mr. Attorney, I'm one of the hangar renters out there. What if somebody has an old sports car and I've rented him, 20 square feet of my hangar? Is that legal?
I'd have to look at all of the details. I don't know that off the top of my head. I'd be happy to investigate it. I just didn't realize this was going to be a topic we were going to discuss tonight.
Yeah. No, don't do it on my account.
Is that a city
hangar? The point is, though, if somebody builds a facility that can accommodate 11 aircraft, he's going to be paying the rent for the space, I assume, for the floor footprint. And what he does with it, I think, is totally up to him, as long as it's not totally against safe operation of the airport.
Well, we just have an obligation as a landlord, though, to look at the particular proposal and make sure that it fits within the lease agreement we have with the FBO. Again, we can talk about all kinds of theoretical situations, but until we have an actual offer, we'd have to look at it.
The FBO already has a tenant, and it's the city. Our T-hangers belong to the city. Basically, even though we own the airport, we are still tenants to the FBO.
Well, now the T-hangers that the city owns are outside of the FBO lease space. We just have an agreement with the FBO to collect the rents and forward those on.
Oh, it is.
We're not a tenant. We're a landlord.
Okay, well, if somebody was going to build that 11 hangar, where would that have to go? Are you designating that into that area around the city's T-hangers and then on the approach to the parking lot?
To answer that, Councilman Hamoki, we would have to do two things. First of all, when the applicant came before the Aviation Commission, it would have to be determined if he is wanting to build on the FBO leased area, in which case he also has the layer that he has to work with the FBO to build that hangar, because that FBO does control that leased area. If it is off the leased area, then the Aviation Commission would make a recommendation to council, if I'm answering your question properly.
Yeah. I think that's a better question, better answer to the question I was. I didn't ask the right question, but that gives me another lead in. So thank you.
The one thing that you have to look at, again, if you look at the hangars designated A2 or A1 through A5, the gray area there would all be ramp space and stub taxiway. None of that exists. So for someone to go in and say, well, we're going to build hangar A6, they're going to have to put in the stub taxiway and the ramp area for A6 before they could even think about constructing it. So it is a very expensive proposition for them.
Okay. How long, Larry, do you think it'll take for the FAA to approve this?
Normally they say they want to have 90 days to look at it because we have been in very close contact with Mr. Rob Rowell with the FAA,
okay.
And it has been through our Aviation Commission. We're hoping we'll get it quicker than 90 days. We do have to have a signature, I believe, from the mayor.
Mm-hmm. That'd be correct.
Sign off on 10 sets of the plans, which are here in this building, and then I will transmit those directly to Atlanta.
You might be late getting home, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah. Whenever they're ready.
Thank you.
Okay, any other comments? We have a motion and a second then.
We just need to vote.
All hands for approval, please. Passes unanimously. Okay. Item two, approval of accommodation tax recommendations. Mr. Pierce, please.
Mayor, thank you very much. If you look on page 65 of your agenda packet, there's a fairly comprehensive spreadsheet there that was prepared by our PRT staff. We have another $126,963 in carryover funds that were carried forward. As I set forth in my memo, our fourth quarter was kind of a record collection for accommodations tax. When we received this, and we also received a payment back of monies from Prep Fest, they decided not to have their event this year. It's about $9,500, so they've paid that back in. Total requests were over $424,000. The staff and accommodations tax committee took a look. They found that of those total requests, about $286,000 potentially would qualify for funding. The committee made a recommendation to you last March, and council approved total funding of $183,725. That left $107,305 in unfunded requests that would qualify for funding. With this collection in our fourth quarter of the last fiscal year, an opportunity presented itself for the Accommodations Tax Committee to fully fund the requests that qualified for funding by the committee. So before you tonight, in my memo, is the list of additional funding that is available and has been unanimously approved by the Accommodations Tax Committee, and that is their recommendation. You have 1 through 14, and the amounts are set forth. That does total $107,305. That will leave $19,658 as a contingency. In the past, the committee has recommended that, and council has approved a contingency, because sometimes through the balance of the year, an additional request would come in and would be appropriate for funding. And this provides that opportunity for the funding to take place. So for council consideration tonight is approval of the Accommodations Tax Committee recommendation for $107,305 in additional funding for the listed 14 entities, and then the withholding of $19,658 as contingency funds that could be reviewed by the Accommodations Tax Committee, and then would come before council for approval.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second for approval?
I so move.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Second, okay. Discussion?
Yes, I have several questions. Do we have to spend this money?
It is a recommendation from the Accommodations Tax Committee, and it's to fund the full request for marketing that they've made. This money is used to promote these events and bring tourists into the city, and it's typically advertised more than 50 miles away.
How many of these events have already been done for the year?
Glenn Parker is here. He could probably share that with us. I would think this is for the coming year, Glenn, but...
No, I got the impression it was for the last year. Anyway.
And again, typically an event is held, they have the receipts from the event that were spent on the marketing, and then we reimburse.
Yes.
It is for the current fiscal year that we are in.
Current fiscal year that started July 1st.
Correct.
2012.
Correct. So some of these events could have already been held, but just as Mr. Pierce said, just because we award them $10 and they have to show us X amount, that $10 worth of receipts before we reimburse them, they do not get this money. The money's not fronted, in other words.
Okay, so other than Prep Fest, did everybody spent every dime?
Of the prior approval.
Of the prior approval?
The prior, yes.
They're approved for that, Mr. Dwar, but again, they would have to give us a receipt receive the money.
So the receipts that came in for 100% of what they were authorized.
Correct.
Did anybody not get any money that asked for it?
No, sir. Everybody got the full allotment they requested, and this is not the first time that has occurred. It has occurred at least two other times in previous years that I can think of. When we've been able to fully fund everybody at 100%.
And my last question is, in the minutes of September 6th for the Accommodations Tax Committee, it mentions the fact Lisa Hall talked about web advertising. Is web advertising authorized for, is this money authorized for web advertising?
And encouraged.
Hmm?
Very much so. It's encouraged, yes. If you're advertising on a website,
how does that compare to the 50-mile business?
I think the state recognizes the fact that you put something up on a website, that the distribution of that information does go out there. One of the things to keep in mind, I probably mention this every time we come up here, the state changed the definition of a tourist a few years ago. You don't have to stay in a hotel room. You just have to visit. So events like, I don't want to pick one, but if we get a bunch of people in town, it doesn't necessarily mean they have to stay overnight for that event to be successful in the state's eyes when they're looking at that event from a tourism perspective.
So that reduces the requirement for these event hosters to go to check the hotels for the heads on beds?
And somewhat.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Parker, what criteria would have to be met to receive additional monies from the balance that's left? If these that have been already allocated some funds needed some additional funds?
A group would just have to resubmit a new application to come before the committee. And normally each year we have a group that, like Prep Fest did, I know they decided because of the merger, they decided not to hold their event, but we'll get a new event that comes to town and they'll contact Ms. Hall, who will make them aware of this money, and then we'll have to bring that individual request back to City Council.
Now, Mr. Parker, just for clarification for some of our citizens that are out here tonight, what happens to this money if it is not spent in this manner?
What we don't spend of the current fiscal year's money will be the first money spent in next year's allotment. Ms. Abney, her staff keeps up with that, so we'll spend up to 100% of this money, and then any leftover, that will be the first money spent. We have, I think it's a two-year window to spend the money. Back to Mr. Dwar's earlier statement, if we don't spend it, it goes back to the state.
Yeah.
And that's, we don't want to do that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you, Glenn.
Yes, sir.
Any other comments? Okay. We've got a motion and a second. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 3, first reading of an ordinance to annex 5.71 acres on Whiskey Road at Stratford Drive, zoned at Plan Commercial PC, and approve a concept plan. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. The title of the ordinance is an ordinance to annex to the corporate limits of the City of Aiken certain property consisting of 5.71 acres of land, more or less owned by Farrell L. Holly Jr. and others, and to zone the same Plan Commercial and approve the proposed concept plan. You do have a memo from Wilkins Byrd, the chairman of the Planning Commission. They did hear this request at their regular meeting on September 11 for the annexation. That goes through the details of the application. It's compliant with the zoning ordinance. Planning Commission has voted 5-0 to recommend the approval of this proposed development for the construction of two hotels on this property. There are 9 listed conditions as part of their recommendation. The proposed ordinance that you have before you tonight does incorporate those conditions as well. Mr. Evans is still in the room and can answer questions about this application process, but for council consideration tonight, is the first reading approval. If you did approve it tonight, there would still be a second reading at your meeting on October 8.
Okay, sir. Thank you. In order to get it to a discussion period, do we have a motion and a second for approval? I'll move for approval. Do we have a second? We have no discussion. We can discuss it.
Well, could we discuss it among council before we go for a motion? Or
well, normally we'll do this, but Mr. Attorney?
I mean, generally you're supposed to have the motion and the second first to open discussion.
Well, okay.
No? I second.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, now, Dick?
it almost has a little to do with the project, but this seems to me to be an ideal time to take to ask Mr. Hawley to put an access road on the 30 acres of property that he has so that we can far more effectively control the traffic on this piece of property as it continues to get developed. What we're doing tonight is taking a piecemeal of the 30 acres, and we're going to put a driveway in, I guess, kind of close to Stratford Drive. Whereas if he may not be willing, but if he were willing to put an access road for his property, then that access road would take the traffic, and Stratford Road wouldn't even be an issue. We wouldn't even need a driveway on the Stratford Road.
Well, may I suggest that before we ask a bunch of questions, we get those that are the majors here in doing this, getting this done, Mr. Hawley and others, to come up and tell us what they want to do.
Well, you asked for comments, so...
So everyone has a knowledge of what's being asked for here. Well, plenty of time for questions, Dick. Well, we'll be here all night if you want to for questions.
Well, I know what's being asked for, Mr. Mayor. I just made a
general
I'm
sure others have questions, too, but I'm willing to wait until we find out the story, you know, and then we'll get, as citizens and council, can make comments first if you want to. That's fine. Everybody's going to get a chance. So do we have agreement to move in that direction? Okay. Who would like to speak?
We have Tilda Hildebrand here, Mayor.
Okay. Mr. Hildebrand?
I'm Tilda Hildebrand with Ashton Hildebrand. I'm here tonight, happy to be here tonight, representing the owners of the property, Larry and Charles Hawley, and the developer, Mr. Ashok Patel. What I'd like to do is briefly go over the site and then discuss details of the site plan, and then address concerns that were voiced at the September 11th Planning Commission meeting. And Ms. Rideout, could you flip that back, I think, to a previous slide that shows the larger parcel? Thank you. The parcel under consideration tonight is 5.7 acres on the northwest corner of Whiskey and Stratford. I think most of you are familiar with that. It is a portion of a larger tract, 30.40 acres. The parcel tonight under consideration is approximately 600 feet from the western property line, which is residential development, Stratford Hall. It is approximately 900 feet from the northern property line, more residential property. There's also residential property on the south side of Stratford Drive, Springstone and Springstone Villas. Ms. Rideout, if you would flip to the next slide. Thank you. And please feel free to ask any questions you might have while I go through this. The site or the project consists of two hotels. The hotel on the southern parcel, we call Hotel A. A is a 95 unit hotel with 95 parking stalls. The proposed hotel on the northern parcel would be a 90 unit hotel with 115 parking spaces. Mr. Patel later will discuss the specifics of each of these hotels and the architecture and the signage. Again, what I'd like to do is discuss basically the specifics of the site. The plan for the project involves, as Mr. Dewar said, a driveway onto Whiskey Road and a driveway onto Stratford Drive, which will be developed with the initial hotel. The location of these is the driveway on Stratford Drive is approximately 400 feet from an existing driveway, Lynn Drive, or an existing roadway, Lynn Drive, which accesses Springstone Villas. We had some discussion about the separation of those two last time. The location onto Whiskey Road is just beyond the, just north of the left turn taper onto Powder House Road. There are some existing drives across Whiskey Road, which during the discussion of the traffic study were determined to be too close to the intersection, and this drive does not align with those. We tried to slide it as far north as we could. The open space, and again, all these are items that were discussed at the Planning Commission meeting. The total open space combined on the two sites is 31%. There are planting strips provided along Whiskey Road, actually along all property lines, but along Whiskey Road and along Stratford Drive are the primary planting strips. The width of those both exceed the required planting strips. There is an existing 20-foot Aiken Electric Co-op easement along Whiskey Road, so the developer has proposed to slide the development back to allow more room for planting strip outside the requirements in front. The planting strip along Stratford Drive is provided in excess of what is required so that a number of existing trees can be preserved along Stratford Drive, some fairly large trees. The remainder of the site behind these two existing strips at some time in the past has been clear cut, so there are no measurable trees, no significant trees on the site other than those along the property lines. Some of the concerns that were brought up at the September 11th Planning Commission meeting were was a question that is the driveway really necessary on the Stratford Drive? That driveway is necessary so that service vehicles, emergency vehicles and whatnot can access this site, service the dumpsters here, trash trucks, and exit onto Stratford Drive back out to Whiskey Road. That drive or that connector would also provide a second access to Stratford Hall, Springstone Villas, and Springstone Subdivision if there were an accident at the intersection, which you most typically would expect for an accident or traffic problems to occur at this intersection. And again, the driveway here on the Stratford Drive is approximately 400 feet from the nearest drive, which is the entrance to Springstone Villas. There was a question concerning sequencing of traffic lights. The citizens in these three neighborhoods expressed some concern about the sequencing of the lights. There was not mention of that in the traffic study that we had done. And at the Planning Commission meeting, there was some discussion as to hopefully the city would investigate the sequencing of that light and make whatever adjustments were needed, maybe currently, but also after development of the hotels. Again, a traffic study has been prepared for this site. It was prepared in July of 2012. The traffic counts were actually performed in May of 2012 during school time. There were some concerns about signage, and Mr. Patel will expand on signage, but there were some concerns about location of signage. Primarily, if you look in your packet, probably you could see better than this screen, but there are two signs proposed, one for each hotel. This sign for Hotel A, located near the entrance drive, and this sign for Hotel B. And again, the concern was, would those signs interfere with the power line easement? Would there be any potential for electrical discharge, whatnot? Those signs would be located outside the easements of the Aiken Electric Co-op, so we wouldn't anticipate any problems with that. Again, there was some discussion about the size of the Holiday Inn Express sign as proposed to be 15 feet. The Planning Commission staff had voiced some concerns related to that. Those concerns were related to dimensions of the base versus the height and size of the sign itself, and those have since been resolved. Basically, a proportional issue more than there was not a concern with the height of the sign. In other words, the sign didn't meet the specific requirements of a monument sign, but the owner has submitted information to show that a modification would be done to meet that. Another concern voiced by a number of people was construction access onto or construction traffic on Stratford Drive. And the construction traffic could be directed and will be directed to Whiskey Road. When a site is developed, ultimately the developer is required to install a construction access. Typically, and I'm sure you've all seen it, typically a large 100-foot long rock mat that keeps mud and debris off the highways. That construction access would be installed here on the Whiskey Road, and with its installation here, it would prohibit construction traffic from entering and exiting Stratford Drive. There was fairly lengthy discussion about, and again, Mr. DeWar brought that up tonight, there was a lot of discussion about connectivity, both north and south, primarily north and south. One of the conditions of, or one of the recommendations by the Planning Commission was that a stub out be provided not only to the western property line, to the property remaining property owned by the Hollies, but also to the northern property line. And Mr. Patel, the developer, has agreed to that. That's not shown on this sketch, but there would be a connection both east and west and north and south. The planting strip along Stratford Drive, again, is provided at a width that exceeds the requirement of the zoning ordinance. At its narrowest point, it's 27 feet. A citizen spoke out and in hopes that we would consult a professional to advise us on preserving these existing trees, and certainly we have a landscape architect that we have on retainer that we would certainly consult with to preserve those trees. There are a number of large trees along Stratford Drive. The dumpsters are located near the western edge of the site, here and here. Those dumpsters, per the zoning ordinance, will be screened with fence and plantings as required by the zoning ordinance. The maximum building height on the site, the two buildings, and Mr. Patel will talk about this in a few minutes, meet the current zoning ordinance requirements, and those are less than the 50 feet allowed in this proposed zoning. The nearest house, which is from Hotel A to the first house in Springstone Villas, is approximately 420 feet. The nearest house that currently faces Whiskey Road, although it's back into Springstone Villas, is approximately 1,000 feet from Hotel A. Both of these hotels will have a pool. The pools will be fenced and regulated by primarily South Carolina DHEC. So those regulations would be adhered to related to children getting into the pool area. Commercial traffic through the sites would be what would normally be expected to service a hotel, and again, Mr. Patel may elaborate a little more, but related to linens, related to trash pickup, related to just smaller deliveries. The hotels would be built with a life expectancy of approximately 40 years. And finally, the detention pond shown on this conceptual plan is located in the southwest corner here. This would be a regional pond that would serve both of the hotels. This detention pond would be fenced, and that fencing would be screened with shrubs or vegetation as required by the zoning ordinance. So we certainly wouldn't expect those to be highly visible. That is a summary of the site plan for the hotel, and that addresses all of the comments that the citizens had last time. Certainly, I'm open to questions and would like to address any other concerns that they may have tonight. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Council, do you have questions you want to ask at this point?
How many entrances are in this neighborhood? Entrances and exits. Is there one way in and one way out? Yep.
That is Stratford Drive, and that is the only access to Springstone Villas, and Stratford Hall.
So even though they'll have this traffic light there and it'll be timed, how many cars could get through that? You know, Whiskey Road is very busy. It would just seem like
I would have to
sort of nightmarish to try and get on Whiskey Road with one way in and one way out and three different neighborhoods.
I would have to defer to a traffic engineer on that. I couldn't answer that, although we did have a traffic study performed by a city-approved traffic engineer, and they did not recommend any widening, turn lanes, any physical improvements to that intersection.
And no other exit or entrance?
They did not recommend that.
Mr. Hildebrand, you had another traffic engineer as well. Did you not?
Well, the traffic study, when it's submitted to the Planning Commission, is reviewed by the city's on-call traffic engineer.
Yeah, Roger, I realize that, but wasn't there another traffic engineer?
Our traffic engineer was DRMP, and that's the only one that we consulted.
Well, that's the second one, isn't it?
No, that...
Are you saying our city engineer was the only traffic engineer?
No. We had a consultant perform a traffic study.
That's what I'm asking. Weren't there two? Yours and the city?
That is correct.
On call?
Yes.
On call. Okay. Just wanted to make that clear.
The city's traffic consultant reviews all traffic studies submitted by a private company.
Right. I understand. I understand that. I just wanted to make sure it was clear to everybody there were two.
There
wasn't just the city's.
Right. That's correct.
Okay.
Wait a minute. There is one traffic study. It was reviewed by the city traffic engineer.
Okay.
Well, the city did not do its own traffic study.
They could have made it.
I wish they did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But there were two of them that look at it.
Right.
Okay. Any questions by council?
Well,
do we
want to hear the citizens first?
Of course we do. I'm just asking.
I got several here, so
if I could,
which you want first, the citizens?
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor.
Yes.
Could I introduce Mr. Patel and have him give some details
absolutely.
On the hotels? And
absolutely.
Then, this is Ashok Patel, the developer.
Okay. Welcome, Mr. Patel. We didn't mean to keep you out of the discussion at all.
No,
it was just a little bit of going on here as to who wanted to speak first, and so this is fine. We appreciate you being here.
My name is Ashok Patel. The address is 1338 Hillside Avenue in Florence, South Carolina. I represent the company that's developing these hotels, and I'm one of the primary owners of the company. We've been in this business for 35 years and developed quite a few hotels across a few states. And 20 years back, we developed jointly Holiday Inn Express at Colony Parkway. We sold it 2 years back. We developed a Fairfield Inn on Colony Parkway about 7 years back. We're still owners in it. So that we know Aiken market, we know what's going on, not only from hotel side, the need for some quality hotels, with the expansion of other industries coming in. So this hotel primarily has been designed, for a higher quality to give the ambience on Whiskey Road, for a property that will stand out. And hopefully all the adjoining neighbors or all the adjoining properties that will come up will be, following some standard that will meet there. So if you want to go up onto the slide where the elevation is, I can talk about what the exterior of the building is.
It's a page 85, Ms. Rydell.
This is Hotel A, which is going to be branded Holiday Inn Express. It's four stories. It's got 95 units, 95 guest rooms, and the bottom floor, the exterior of it is stacked stone finish, and floors 2, 3, and 4 is stucco system. The roof is pitch roof with shingles. And the height of this building at the highest point or the medium point, you know, what the city looks at is 48.9 feet, which is less than 50 feet that's required. So the exterior structure on the right side, you see a little building there, that is where the outdoor pool is. And that is, you see the fencing on it, shown on the drawing. So to get into the pool, it has got locked gates, you know, and so it's not easily accessible unless a person staying in a hotel can get has got a key to it. So the neighborhood, you know, to protect the children and stuff like that, you know, it would be very hard unless they jump the fences, you know. And but we do have people on staff that look out for stuff. We have cameras out there, so, you know, just for safety purposes. Life safety is the biggest concern in operation of a hotel. This hotel is the way the road system was designed to access from Whiskey Road, go out on Stratford or vice versa. One of the key elements for the fire truck to be able to come in and get out and not just be, you know, what happens if there's an accident out at the entrance and they can't get to the hotel or whatever happens. So that is a very, very important stuff, that they should be able to access to all sides of the building easily. And the other, can you go to the other side, which is the Hotel B? This Hotel B is less than 50 feet in height, the highest point where you see those parapet walls. And it has also got the same stone structure on the ground floor, you know, so that the whole development, you know, looks the same. And then the stucco system is beyond that. The roof system on this hotel is about, there are scuppers sewn there, you know, just between the windows, and that's about 5-6 feet below the parapet wall height. Yeah, see, right there, there is a scupper right there. So, you know, any units on top of the building will not be visible. And this is the front view of the building, which is a lot wider than the other hotel. This is, and this hotel primarily is built for extended stay business, which is a new concept in the last 15, 20 years that is really coming up. People come and stay there for a little longer periods. They've got more home-like atmosphere in it. And both the hotels have no bars, no restaurants. This hotel has got a 600 square foot meeting space. And so that's basically, if you have any questions, you know, for me or Tilden.
Well, concerning your extended stay, is there any limit to how long a person or a family or could be there?
Yeah, well, it's mainly rented. By the maximum limit is by the week, so they have to renew the contract on a weekly basis. That is how it is. You know, they can stay a night or longer. The model, and this is not our model, it's a model in the industry across the nation, is they're weekly, they do get a break, you know, because people might have to stay in between. They're moving houses, they're selling houses, their house got fired, they have to come in and here for temporarily, the insurance company puts them up. There are new employees into town, the people who come for training, others, you know, who would be staying there. So it's got a multi-purpose, you know, why a person won't stay there. Mm-hmm. We, the company, owns a few of these hotels, you know, and if you go inside a guest room, it just looks like a home. You know, they bring their pictures, they lay them out, you know, they might have their pet there. I mean, it's entirely different than go to a transient hotel room where they, out of a suitcase, they pack it, they're gone. So this is a very different. And so we feel the Aiken market needs this. This is an upper-end extended stay hotel. So it's not like the mid-scale or the lower end.
Yeah. Can you share with us what they might rent for?
This hotel nightly would rent for $130, $40 a night. If they go on a weekly basis, it might average out to a little over $100.
Mr. Patel, if these were to be approved, approximately how many employees would be employed by each of these hotels?
The Hotel A, we typically we have those size hotels. We run anywhere from 25 to 30 employees. They are full-time. And sometimes, you know, we add a few part-time, five of them. And this Hotel B would have, you know, about 35 people. Because it does a lot more inside. You see, they've got racquetball courts, and they have, they lay out a lot of food, you know, which is complimentary for the hotel guests, you know, for morning and evening to, you know, make a social gathering of all the people staying there, say, doing, they know each other instead of venturing out alone. They have someone to go out with. So that does add up a lot more staff, you know. And the deliveries that will come to this hotel is mainly all the hotel room supplies, and that food that we provide complimentary. So the size of trucks that the supplies deliveries are like you know UPS or Federal Express kind of delivery trucks. You know, once in a while when we go through renovation where bedding and furniture comes in, that's where the tractor trailer will come in. They deliver that, but there's. That's why if you see a common road system, it is straight. We don't want to meander because they'll be going over curves and landscaping and might not be able to back out. And it'll be a, so we did, in one of the drawings, we have this drawing where the truck turn is there, right? Where the tractor trailer, it's, yeah, I don't know which page is that. And we'll show you that how we have...
Page 82. Is that what you're thinking about, Mr. Patel? Is that the
thing? Yeah, well, we had...
I think what he's referring to, and it's not in your packet, we use a program called AutoTurn, and what it does is we route a tractor-trailer truck, really a number of different types of trucks, through a site, and it shows where all the wheels would hit so that we would avoid curbs, and stay, you know, within the travel lanes. That was presented, I think, to the Planning Commission. It's not in this packet. But, again, everything in here is well planned so that the occasional tractor trailer, fire trucks, and whatnot can access and maneuver through the site.
That's the reason why the common driveway is straight, you know, so that we can park a tractor trailer there, remove the stuff out of it, load up those, and they can go out easily. And so that's basically what I have. Any questions, other questions you have, or on the okay. Public?
Any questions, Council? Okay. Why don't we let our citizens speak now,
yeah.
And then any questions, of course, you can answer, and Mr. Hillbrand can answer. Let's just start on this side, and we'll go up this side and then back down over this way. Oh, yes, ma'am, you want to speak first? And just tell us your name, if you would, please.
Carla Nozilia, 305 Ascot Drive, Springstone Subdivision. I'm the secretary of the Springstone Homeowners Association. And the traffic study was referenced many times so far. And I take issue with that study because the levels of service that were mentioned in, I guess, that are common levels of service go from A to F. And they say that now, at that intersection, the level of service is D. And it will stay at D. And therefore, since it's not going to get any worse, then it's okay. And I don't think D is okay. You remember that beautiful slide we saw from Officer Odenthal All the rivulets went down into the one stream. That's us. We have one stream, Stratford Hall. That is the Stratford Drive. That is the only entrance and exit, as the councilwoman mentioned. That's it. We're not even like gerbils and have different ways to go. We have one way to go. And we have over 200 homes. And if you think of it, that probably 75% of the people are working. They have 2.5 children that they take to school. Probably of those, 40% have two people working. You have a lot of traffic there. So I do not think that a level of service of D is appropriate. And I would say that we were told today that Mr. Patel will give us a north-south, east-west connection. To what? That was never mentioned. If that connection does not go to Whiskey Road, what good is it? Because that is our problem, getting from our homes to Whiskey Road. And that is our only entrance and egress.
Well, he would have to answer that specific question that you just asked.
Yes.
I can't answer that.
That is my problem, the safety. If we need someone to come, fire trucks, police, one road. That's my concern. Thank you for listening.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am. Yes, sir.
Richard Schreck, 244 Sessions Drive in the Stratford Hall complex. I think the plan as presented is a very good plan, much better than other alternatives. My concern, as the previous speaker indicated, was the added traffic and on Stratford Drive. I'd like to know if any I heard that it's required for emergency vehicles, fire apparatus, service vehicles, etc. But has any consideration been given to put a gate with a call box or remote openers to the fire departments, police departments, or if they had a call box with a TV camera, somebody could push a button and open the gate and whatever. And I think the project would be acceptable by a majority of the residents. That's all I have to offer.
Let me just ask a question. You're talking about a gate that would move at someone's...
Up and down gate. You say them in some...
Where would that gate be?
At the entrance to the driveway on Stratford Drive.
I'm not sure. If you will, when you get back up...
I'm just asking for a consideration.
Answer that question, please.
That's all I have.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Good evening.
Good evening.
My name is Gary Unverzak. I live at 152 Antietam Drive in Stratford Hall. I'm opposed to the plan, the proposal. My overall objection is not only getting out through Stratford Drive, because it is the only access that we have, but I'm also concerned with the overall issues that we have on Whiskey Road. Whiskey Road, as most people probably know that live on drive on Whiskey Road, is extremely overcrowded. And if we continue to allow Whiskey Road to commercialize and build without thoughts for the future, then we're not going to be able to ever move on Whiskey Road. It takes 20 minutes to go a half a mile right now on Whiskey Road. And if we allow this hotel to be built, that's only going to take and continue to get worse. The green areas that we have presently in these locations have been a buffer, and they've been a buffer for years. We've looked at the historic areas in downtown, and we said we need to preserve the historic areas. Well, Aiken, the city of Aiken, is saying, well, we want to annex this area, okay, for growth. Well, why aren't we looking to preserve green areas for the future of Aiken, okay, and for the future, okay, for historic needs of Aiken? Why are we taking and looking to constantly build and destroy green areas? It doesn't seem to me to make sense. These areas are beautiful areas. Okay, if we continue to allow Whiskey Road to develop uncontrolled, it's just going to turn into another Washington Road. Okay, when in fact we have plenty of infrastructure on Pine Log Road going east. We've got plenty of infrastructure around Aiken. Doesn't seem to make sense when we continue to take and build and build and build when the infrastructure on Whiskey Road is way overcrowded. I'm not against, you know, bringing in jobs. I'm not against growth in Aiken by any means. I'm not against hotels because I think they're great. But I am against the constant growth on Whiskey Road because Whiskey Road can't handle it. We don't have infrastructure on Whiskey Road, and we're not going to have infrastructure on Whiskey Road for another 5 or 10 years. And we've got to face that. And if we don't face that, then we're fooling ourselves. If we just continue to put more and more and more on Whiskey Road, then we're absolutely stupid. And we have a responsibility to the common good of the people of Aiken. That's what your responsibility is the common good of the people of Aiken. We have children, we have grandchildren. And if we can't stand up to the responsibilities that we face, then shame on us. Leave it green. Preserve it for our children. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next, who's next?
I'm Donald Randall, 209 Khaki Court in the Springstone Villas. My main objection here, I objected last week to the height of the buildings, and that didn't seem to affect anyone, because all we have is 1 and 2 story homes in that area, and now we're going to have a 50-foot building at the corner, which is going to look like the Sears Tower. But anyway, according to your prospectus here, we're expecting an extra 1,641 trips per day with these two hotels. Now, logically, if you don't put another signal right at the entrance, the Whiskey Road entrance to that hotel, they're all going to come down Stratford Drive, and they're going to exit Stratford Drive, along with the garbage trucks and everything else. I don't see how it can handle it, but that's the secondary problem. The main problem is, 3 developments have been built so far, and no one has followed the rules with 2 exits on each development. We only have 1 exit, and that's it, Stratford Road. And your laws say we've got to have entrance and exit two places. That's what I got. And I totally object to it.
Well, is that in fact the rule in the city that a neighborhood's supposed to have two entrances and two exits?
That's what they're saying here?
It had to come up.
Because that's why they want Stratford exit?
Yeah, no.
I just want to make sure.
Mr. Evans can speak to the zoning ordinance requirements.
I'm trying to think of something in the regulations requiring two exits into a development or a subdivision. And I don't have them memorized. I can't recall anything in the subdivision regulations requiring two entrances. We routinely send any development plans to public safety, and they review them. And if they have a concern about access, they will state that. But to answer the question clearly, I would really need to go back and look at the regulations and be sure I'm not forgetting about some regulation requiring that. I do not recall anything saying you've got to have two exits or entrances into a development. I mean, Stratford Hall was approved a quarter of a century ago, probably. Designed just the way it is, and council approved it just the way it is. And I don't know what the regulations were at that point.
Tucker Creek's only got one entrance.
That's correct.
And that's been more recently approved.
There's a lot of areas, especially if it sounds like that, only have one entrance.
Yeah. I certainly don't recall that. And I know there's some regulation on how long a drive can be, or a road can be.
Correct.
That is true.
But
where you live, there's no problem. But I'd be glad to check for a second reading to be sure that what the regulation.
Certainly, we'd check that out. Yeah. Who else would like to speak? Okay.
Yeah, what's that, right?
Good evening, gentlemen and madam lady. Good evening, sirs. My question is really going to be to you. I do recall the traffic study. If memory serves me properly, the traffic study was done on Whiskey. Is that correct? Did you do a traffic? Yes. Did you do a traffic study on Stratford Drive? Did you put down the markers and see how many cars from the three subdivisions traveled in and out on a day on that particular daily basis?
Yes, that's in the traffic study.
It is.
Yes, go ahead. Go ahead, address it. That's fine.
Yes. It was the intersections of Stratford Hall Drive, Whiskey Road, Tyler House, the entrances to the hotel were all studied.
I remember the marker going down on Whiskey. I never saw a marker going down across Stratford Drive, counting the number of cars in and out. According to you or your study, you have a generation of 1,641 trips per day being generated by 180 rooms. How many in your study, how many homes occupy the three subdivisions? This lady said, what was yours, 200?
202.
All right, that's one subdivision.
No.
Oh, that's all?
Yes,
all.
202, yes.
Okay, Benetti.
Again, I'm not a traffic engineer, but the accepted number of trips per day for a single family household is 10. So 2,000 and
which would be, you're going to increase that by one half.
Well, the
Mr. Hildebrand, excuse me a minute. Would you come to the mic and speak so that we can make sure we get all of this on a tape? Sir, I don't know if you could hear him or not. But
while he's coming up, that 1641 is not just on one road. That's on the number of connectors that they deal with, yet your 2,000 or 200 homes is on one road, because those are all the people that are coming out of those three areas.
And again, without expressing every detail of the traffic study, obviously, Mr. DeWar, you are correct. Those trips are distributed on the two entrances and exits. They're not all, you wouldn't expect everyone to enter on Stratford Drive and everyone to exit to Stratford Drive.
But the only thing your study does not show is the normal trips per day, which you're not required to, but the trips per day from the existing residents in the neighborhood.
They were counted. Yes, they were.
Does it not have it under a no-build situation?
Yes, that would be in the no-build situation is factored into the projected also. And again, I didn't prepare the traffic study myself, but it is shown in the study. Those are the figures on, and the page numbers got written over some other pages, but that starts at page 111 in your packet and goes through page 115.
Yeah, I just didn't see the high number that would be expected to be coming out of Stratford Hall. I mean, highest number I think I see is somewhere in the area of 90.
And those are hourly numbers.
Yeah, well, that's another important point. So it's 1641, not all at once. 1641 over four roads spaced out, just like the 2,000 coming out of the neighborhood is not all at once coming out of Stratford. It's an hourly rate over a 24-hour period, more during the peak time in the morning and the evening, and less during non-peak times. Yeah,
absolutely correct.
And the no-build scenario, Mr. Wells, is on page 107 of the agenda packet.
The next question I have for you would be, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have had you sit down, because my next question is that you said that your entrance from Stratford Drive would give the three subdivisions a second enter-exit access. You have no problem with 200 people if they wish to use that entrance going around your property?
Well,
you're
speaking for Mr. Patel. I'm sure that he would not want everyone that lives in the three subdivisions to cut the corner here, but this access through the development would provide another means to get in and out if there were an accident at the intersection that blocked traffic from entering and exiting Stratford Drive at the traffic light.
Well, then if there was an accident preventing people from exiting on Stratford Drive, then you would have all those people using his entrance off of Stratford.
I don't know that he could prevent that. It's not gated in any way, is it, Mr. Patel?
It will be fine, you know.
In an emergency situation.
Okay. I thank you for answering that. Council, I have a question to you regarding the timing on the traffic light. Because Whiskey is such a highly traveled road right now, I know when I exit, so we're talking about my making a northeast turn. I never get to the traffic light when it's green. It's always red when I get up there. But that traffic light, I judge only by the radio and the song that's playing on it, That traffic light is approximately almost 3 minutes long. And there are always, when I exit, either ahead of me or behind me, including myself, there are always a minimum of three cars. What are you going to do about the timing to get us out onto Whiskey Road? I don't expect an answer from you this evening, but I do want you to take that under consideration, because now there's going to be more than that if the residents at the hotel use Stratford Drive, if it's not just going to be used for emergency vehicles.
Is that traffic signal there on the loop system, or is it not?
It is.
It is? Okay, so it registers your car when you pull up.
I doubt that. We know. I doubt that we know where to position our car to pull up to.
Well, I think we need to check it. There's a lady that's been talking with me for the last 3 years on it. When you get there, it's a minute and 18 seconds, and I didn't believe her, so I went down there and checked it the last couple of years. And it is a, they got a name for it, where you go there and you wait for the minute and 18 seconds, then you go.
Yeah, it's the.
There's
a
name for that. Trust me, it is not always a minute and 18 seconds.
Depends on what time you get there.
I watch, I have a digital clock in my car, and I watch it. And I don't always get there as the light is changing. So I think you have to research that again.
That light is part of our fusion system that we discussed, had a full presentation on. It's a computer system, and I'll tell everyone in the room that it does give preference to Whiskey Road traffic. It does give preference to Whiskey Road traffic, but it does a constant calculation, so the interval is not necessarily a set interval. It depends on the traffic situation. It's constantly recalculating that.
And is that traffic determined by Whiskey North and South, or do we enter into that compilation?
It all factors in. Their cameras are pointed in all directions, and they measure all cars at the intersection. And again, it's not just that intersection. It's looking at activity all throughout the system, and the intervals are calculated to keep a traffic flow.
It doesn't flow out of the three subdivisions, trust me.
And there are some amongst us that just don't think it works as well as others think it does. So,
I guess the one by the courthouse affects the one on...
It calculates the flow for the whole system. And it starts at South Boundary and Whiskey, and then goes down to Talatha.
Well, the bottom line is we will get it checked out.
Absolutely.
I appreciate
it. I've had more people tell me they like the traffic signal than what we've had in the past, and I personally like it too. I'm on that road quite a bit, and if you catch it just right, you can go all the way down Whiskey Road. If you don't catch it right, then you're going to stipe everyone. So then you've got to either slow down or speed up a little bit. Catch up there.
Within the limit, though, right there.
Do it.
I really don't have a problem about the hotel. I think that it would be a welcome sight compared to the overgrown lot, which the town does not mow frequently enough. And I know that because I volunteer to clean up Whiskey Road. And there have been times when I have said, I'm sorry, I cannot do it. The grass is too high. I am not walking through there. So, yes, the hotel would be a welcome sight there. But to use Stratford Drive when it's not even adequate traffic-wise at the traffic light for the three subdivisions, it's just going to be very unwelcome. Plus, we really do not want, and I don't know if this was a pledge made tonight, but we really do not want those pine trees off of Stratford touched. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, madam.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
Mr. Mayor, Council, I'm Richard Mason. I live at 133 Steeple Ridge Road in Springstone. I'm the president of our homeowners association, and we've had the pleasure of having several of you in our company taking care of the road situations that we've been trying to resolve and seem to be getting some progress on. I was the gentleman who made the presentation at the county meeting asking that an access road be developed if the board could be brought up with the first plot plan. I can show what we were discussing at that meeting.
The one that shows the whole track, sir?
Yes, please. Oh, that's it right there.
Yeah. Page 81.
I do a bit of traveling, as a lot of people do, and in areas where a lot of commercial development is taking place, the access road system is being utilized all over the states that I've traveled. What it does is give a safe traffic flow in lieu of Whiskey Road to this development. If we start at Stratford and you see the line that goes across dividing the property with the back line of where the hotels are going to be, we're only talking about 1,800 feet from Whiskey Road to a little street called Twin Lakes, which is just north of the property of the Fountain Church that is on Whiskey Road. And if the hotel goes in, which it probably will, and we said at that meeting that we didn't object to the hotel in itself, the acceleration of commercial development on that property and the property just south of Stratford, which is also zoned commercial, directly behind the Villas people, is going to increase exponentially. So thinking forward and thinking of the things that could be positive, I think the access road would be the proper thing to do. It would resolve a lot of the questions and the concerns that the people in the room have addressed this evening. I was sorry that Larry left, because I was going to ask him.
Well, he's here, sir. He's just in the next room. He's working on some paperwork. We can get him in here.
I guesstimated, and that's why I would ask his expertise, I guesstimated that it couldn't cost more than $1.3 million to do 1,800 feet of an access road. And since the outlet onto Whiskey would be 1,800 feet from Stratford, that would certainly allow the DOT people ample spacing between red lights as to not have a congestive situation going on there. Because the next light north is the one up near the Chili's in that vicinity. So that is why at the previous meeting we didn't bring up the idea of no access road onto Stratford, because I hadn't had time to do the research that I'm presenting to you at this point.
And sir, Mr. Morris is right behind you.
The question, Larry, is...
I heard it.
Oh, okay. What would you guesstimate that to be?
We're talking about using Twin Lakes as an access road.
As an exit road.
As an exit road.
Making the access road from Stratford down to there, which
right.
is 1,800 feet.
It's been a long time since I've been down Twin Lakes Road. The last time I was down it was when Springstone was first being constructed. As I remembered, it's very narrow. Right away on that's maybe 20, maybe 30 feet, if I remember right. To get any type of a roadway there, you would have to have additional right-of-way.
and also tied in down at Springstone, you would have to deal with the two lakes that are at the bottom of it.
Oh, no, we're not going that far. We're just going to the back end of the church property.
Okay, I see where you're talking about. I don't know. A million may not get it. It would be a very expensive roadway because you would have to have additional right-of-way to make it work. And there are some problems, I think, in obtaining additional right-of-way down through there. But
since the people that are building the hotel own all of that land except for the church property, why wouldn't that fall into a consideration?
I think that'd be up to them to look at. Like I say, I've been down a Twin Lakes Road. It's been a long time.
I was there last night.
Yeah, as I remember right, it's a very small dirt woods road is what it was.
You're exactly right. But, as I said in my opening statement, if we're going to go into the future here, the eventuality is that something's going to have to be done down the road anyhow. This could be the answer to everybody's problem.
I think you'd be better off if you were going to have something like that to create an actual roadway rather than thinking of an exit term, but create a minimum 50-foot wide right-of-way with a minimum two-lane section in there. Like I say, would a million get it? No, I think it's a toss-up. That's going to be a tough road to build.
Larry, point out, if you would, where you're talking about on the map here.
Sarah, would you put me onto this, please?
So that perhaps everybody can understand if they don't already.
I think I can show it better to you, Mayor, on this right here. Once it comes up. Okay, this is the area. You can see where the motels would be. Right there would be where the motels would be. This is Stratford. The Little Woods Road is right up in this area, I believe.
A little
bit further down?
Yeah.
Past the church.
Oh, past the church property.
We need to pull it left.
Okay. So, well, this is as far as I can go.
You're cut off.
Yeah, that's as far as I can go.
Well, you can almost see the top of it. You see where the back of the, is that the church?
It's right on the other side of the church, in other words.
Right in that area?
Right on the other
right
side
on
of the church.
North side of the church.
Okay.
Which then brings me back to what I was saying a while ago. The Hollies do not own that property right there. For that to be an access to this property, you would have to work with the church to actually gain access and buy that right-of-way to bring it through. To make it work, I was thinking that this area right here was one that could be developed into a roadway that would access the rear of this property. That property does generally fall from Whiskey. It falls generally back this way, and there's a ravine that goes through it here, which is the main drainage area, actually comes through down in this area right here. So you would face the problem of getting across here to try to open that up, to open the small woods road up to get to Whiskey.
How far up is the Holly property?
This is the Holly property property line here. This is the church property, I believe. And this is Stratford Hall here. And then, I'm sorry, Stratford Hall Drive here. And then this would be Stratford Hall itself. And then Springstone comes off here. And I believe that's Springstone Village right there. Mm-hmm. Is what I believe that is. And, of course, Whiskey's the main road right there in the front. Which would be
That was a comment that I made at the beginning of the meeting before we got started. And that is that if the Hollies were willing to, and I don't know the distance, to create an access road to the point, that entry and exit to the hotels would happen from Whiskey, then that would alleviate a lot of the concerns that the people from the Stratford neighborhoods have. Again, I don't know how far up that would go, and I don't know if they'd be willing to do that, but given that ultimately this entire 30 acres total? Yep. Project is going to be developed at some point in the future. See, the problem with traffic planning is we have been guilty of not doing it far enough in advance. I mean, how many places in Aiken would we love to have an access road that would smooth traffic? I mean, I don't even know if this is possible, but we ought to at least think about it. And again, I don't know how many 100 feet, 200 feet, I don't know what it is, and I don't know whether you'd be willing to do it or not, but it would certainly empower the traffic for the or allow the traffic for the hotels to enter and exit from Whiskey. You just have two driveways going onto the property.
Property line.
Oh, okay. And that's that's the issue that I raised in the very beginning.
I believe, and Mr. Hildebrand helped me here, we're about 900 feet access along the front.
Yes, I think that's right. Yeah.
From about where the motels are up to about here is about 900.
It's a 200 scale.
Yeah, but you might not need to go 100 feet, 900 feet to satisfy the requirements of two entrances and exits for the hotels.
Right. I believe the shared entrance is right here between the hotels now. And then the other entrance, of course, comes into the back somewhere along here for Stratford Hall Drive. I'm not sure exactly where it is on this aerial. If an entrance were created in the center line of the property, just judging from that property line down to Stratford Hall, you'd be talking somewhere in this area, roughly aligning with that property line here to come into that. And you would have to create a roadway then that would come to the rear of the motels and then come in that way. And I'm having trouble seeing that red light, so let me kind of point it out this way. If a roadway was created roughly in the center of the property, it could be created here, brought back this way, and tied into the motels. That roadway would then provide access to the rear property and would also provide access to this property, and roughly align with this property line, which gets you away from the actual intersection here of Stratford and Whiskey, and would give future access alignment to any roadway that would service these two properties to possibly have a common roadway there. If that helps answer your question.
No, that's far more than I'm asking for. All I am asking for is an access road parallel to Whiskey from that first entrance that we know of right now that's going into the motels for X number of feet back. I don't know what X equals. And then what would happen is if you're going onto that property coming on Whiskey either direction, you've got two driveways to go into, and you eliminate the need to have a driveway to Stratford. That's all I'm saying. And it would enhance the development of the rest of the property. And I don't know if there's anything in the mill or not. Does that make sense?
It's a frontage road.
Frontage road. That's the
frontage
word I
road.
Want. Frontage road. Got to know the right term.
A frontage road, Councilman Dwarf, from the edge of the currently planned motel property, approximately 200 feet, would put me right where I was talking about there.
Yeah.
Across from that point. This is the northernmost edge of the proposed motel property. Approximately 200 feet would put us right there, which is across from that property line.
And then if you had that frontage road, there'd be no need for an exit onto Stratford.
Right. That would give you an entrance here coming in there, and then you'd have a second entrance there.
But that would be up to the owners. And, again, it's easy to spend other people's money. I don't mean to. But that would alleviate the concerns, I think, a lot of the residents, and it would facilitate further development of the project. And it's looking at the property as a whole, not just piecemeal. Because sometimes when you piecemeal, you end up with something that could certainly be approved if you could have looked at the entire project in the beginning.
Okay.
I'd just like to point out a couple of more pieces of information. In the presentation, they talked about having a stub out going out of the back property of the second hotel, which tells us that in some time they expect that road to be continuing from there. And there is also a stub out between the two hotels on the plot plan that shows that they are going to make access to the two tracks in the back of the property, if it's you see what I'm talking about.
Well, it's on page 82, actually, Ms. Rynow, on the concept plan. Yeah.
Right. So you see where the dumpsters are proposed and the retention pond is proposed. That stub out is going to take the future development to the back end of the property. So somebody's already thinking about something's going to happen back there, folks. And if the stub out goes from the second hotel to the north, coming out of the property, which was presented at the county meeting, that tells us that they plan to do something with the property to the north of the second hotel. One of the other points that hasn't been addressed, we took a little tour of our town, and there is no other hotel that exists in the city of Aiken that empties traffic into a residential community. Check it out. There is none.
Welcome.
If you're thinking of the one down where the Applebee's is, there's a second road. They have dual access there. That's the only exception, but there's a dual exit for that property. We're the only one that they would be putting it directly into a residential section with no other alternative for the traffic. I also presented the idea of preserving the trees because my career before coming to Aiken was a landscape developer and installer. And the one thing that they did talk about that's a very good idea is preserving the big trees. But during construction, concern has to be taken to protect the root system of the trees. And that is determined by the canopy of the tree. You don't just cover the roots underneath the trunk of the tree. Right. You have to take into consideration the entire span of the canopy of the tree. Or somewhere in about 3 years, you're going to have a bunch of dead trees standing down there if construction happens to go in and damage the trees. I think I'm just about finished.
Sure. We do have a tree ordinance, sir, and Mr. Evans can speak to that. There's a tree ordinance requirement.
The last point that I'd like to make for council to consider is that of the 200 homes that we have in the Springstone development, the villas in Stratford, just taking a rough guesstimate, we generate $200,000 a year in tax revenue. I would like to see how much tax revenue would be generated by the hotel in comparison to that. Thank you for your time, gentlemen.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, do you want to just touch on a tree ordinance that trees taken down, such and such size, have to be replaced somewhere else, that kind of thing? I just, you know, we heard Mr. Mason talk, and obviously we're all concerned about trees. But we do have to replace some trees, depending on the situation.
I think his question, if I understood it correctly, was protection for trees being saved. And before grading can begin, there has to be protective fencing put up.
Right.
Which is generally where the canopy of the tree is. Not always. Sometimes it's closer to the trunk than the actual canopy. But they have to have the protective fencing up to keep equipment out, keep them off, the equipment off the roots.
They're doing that at the Fresh Market project.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Now, the young lady that spoke before was concerned with trees also. About those pine trees on the side, and if some of those have to come down, I'm saying if, I don't know, they've got to be replaced, or certain size trees have to be replaced?
Trees over a certain size have to be replaced inch for inch until you run out of room on the property.
Okay. And really, that goes for any of the trees that are in the footprint of the building as well, right?
Correct. So,
I think that's one area that we don't have to really worry about too much, or think too much about. Is anyone else that would like to speak? Yes, ma'am.
My name is Faye Hilbert, and I live at the Havens Apartment here in Aiken. And I hadn't really planned on coming here and talking, but what I would tell you is a couple of things. If I were staying at a hotel and I had side access street, Whiskey is so busy, the first thing I would do is go onto Stratford to catch the light. Do it every time. I do it in any city I go in. The other thing I would tell you is, as a potential home buyer, we have been looking at Stratford, and it is, like they said, the street goes, it's one access in, 200 homes, there's enough traffic. You put all this extra traffic, I immediately will never look at Stratford as a place to build or a place to buy. And we've been considering both. And what I would tell you is, I've looked at Cedar Creek. It's a little further out than what I care for. I've looked at Woodside. It has a little more restrictions than I care for. I love the homes in this area. I think the homeowners will end up losing property value, because when you have all that traffic going on that street, in my opinion, people will stay away from buying homes there. And so my concern is for these people and their home values, that they've got beautiful homes, but the value will go down if you have all that traffic. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Anyone else? Okay, let's back to City Council for consideration.
I have since Mr. Morris and Mr. Evans are there, and Mr. Hillebrandt, some questions dear to my heart, since several of the neighbors have had some issues with flooding in their backyards. One of the comments on page 75 is that it was on open space, said the detention pond does not count toward open space requirement and is not included in the calculations. Is this where you can't plant trees in them? Because one came up about 2 years ago that if you plant trees in it, it counts as open space. And if you can't plant trees, it's not like a retention pond would have water, but detention does not. And most of them in a couple of years, they've got more grass and trees growing than we can shake a stick at.
To count as open space, it has to be able to support trees.
And a detention pond could support trees, could it not?
I think so.
If I can answer that one, Councilman Ebner, depending on the type design of the pond, you could certainly use a tree, a cypress-type tree, that would not mind getting its feet wet on a regular basis.
That's what we did at Rye Patch.
That's what we did at Rye Patch, and those trees have thrived in that particular area. We have other places where the detention area is fairly shallow, meaning 3 to 5 feet. The trees in those areas do very well as long as the pond empties and does not stay flooded for an extended period. Until the actual design work is done on this, I don't think we can answer your question whether it could be counted. As an example, if that pond has to be 8 or 10 feet deep, then certainly trees would not propagate in the bottom of it. They would be drowned out. But if it was only 2 or 3 feet deep and a very broad expanse of pond, then certainly trees could withstand that.
It calls it a detention pond, and typically a detention pond drains out in a certain period of time. And retention would have the 6 or 8 feet of water. And on the concept plan, it says detention, which typically would go dry after 72 hours or 128 hours or some period, which a normal tree can pretty well handle. And I don't know what Mr. Hillebrand has in mind for that pond, if it drains out or if it will be actually a retention pond instead of D.
The thing that we would be looking at would be the total volume of the pond. It could conceivably be 8 to 10 feet deep and not have water in it except during a storm.
That's correct.
And we do have examples of those in several places in the city. We also have examples. A good one is behind the mall, where the apartment complexes are to the right, which are senior type assisted living. That pond there, you really don't know the pond is there. It is completely wooded. We worked with that developer to maintain the character of the woods there, and by being creative in the way they bermed the area, they had some topography to work with. And so they were able to save all the trees and count that as green space.
Okay. Well, I think that would be good to look at. If it becomes retention, then that, if it's holding water until Mother Nature takes care of it, would be a retention pond. And since you're there, let's move to the stormwater issues of that whole area. When we were dealing with the residents on Lynn Street there, where it was coming between their houses, all the Whiskey Road water on the other side of Stratford was draining there, and y'all did a little bit of work. Has that system been accepted yet from the Lynn Street all the way through the ponds, all the way down past the new part of Springstone and Stratford Hall?
We do not have any of the system there in the villas. What we do have is a system in Springstone. We went in and upgraded that system several years ago. From the lower end on up for a good ways up into Springstone itself. We would be looking very hard, and we'd be working with Mr. Hildebrand to make sure that this pond would hold enough water not to overtax that system. And what I mean by that is we don't want the this particular pond to discharge so much water that we actually make water coming out of the boxes there in Springstone itself. So would this pond be a standard 25-year design? I think Mr. Hildebrand and I would have to discuss that.
Well, what I'd like to do, and if it's feasible, is between now and the second reading, assuming there is one, I think we need to look at that and be sure that we're not building a trap for ourselves, and then be sure that we have accepted that whole system, because obviously you're going to change the characteristics of flow at this point.
And again, we do have the system in Springstone. That is ours. That comes all the way up to Stratford Hall Drive.
How about up to the, does it come all the way to Lynn?
No, sir. It does not come into the villas itself. The villas discharge into a small lake right there, which is not ours. That is a retention area. And then we pick up from the discharge of that into our system.
All right. So who maintains that retention area right there along Lynn Street?
That should be their homeowners association, to my knowledge. I'm not familiar with it. I've never seen a deed of dedication come forth on that.
Wow. Okay. How do we get that straightened out? Who do I need to just send an email to the city manager to get a more definition of that particular pond? It's a man-made structure. It's not natural.
You talking about the one for Springstone or the one?
The one on Springtone Villa. It's on the, I guess you'd call it kind of the west side of Lynn Street.
Well, that should be part of the subdivision plan that's on file at the deed office. We wouldn't have it if it's not in the city system, but it would be on file at the deed office. That'd be public information.
Because it's not designed right. There's flooding behind those houses whenever you get some type of rain.
Well, that's on Lynn. Right. Where so I'm talking about is actually adjacent to Springstone Drive and not...
Next street down.
Yes, and it's not where you and I looked at a while back.
And so that would be part of this of the developer, and that developer's out of business now, is he not?
I have no clue on the developer of Springstone Villas. The Springstone subdivision developer is out, and that's why we have that system there.
I'll do some more follow-up. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. Any other comments?
Just one. I'll obviously vote to carry this to the second reading, but I would like consideration of doing that frontage road. Just thinking about it, maybe addressing it at the next meeting to see whether or not we could possibly avoid having to use Stratford. So it's a great project.
You can, Ms. Tolley.
My name is Farrell L. Holly, Jr., more affectionately known as Larry, Mr. Mayor, council members. Several comments, and then I'll address Mr. Dwarf's comments. It has been quite a pleasure for me personally and our family to get to know the Patels, get to know their business, Neiman Hotels. They've got a very nice website. I would encourage you to visit it. They've received numerous awards and acclamations over the years, been in business 35 years, have a stellar reputation for doing things right. This particular site that we're talking about today is, as been pointed out, a portion of 31 acres that we own at this location. It's been zoned urban development for I don't know how long, many, many years. It's had for sale signs on it since the early to mid 80s. We've had interest in it before. This is the furthest that the interest has gone, and it's a reflection of Aiken's continuing to grow and to grow on Whiskey Road. It's vitality of a business that's there on Whiskey Road. This particular use for that corner, I think, is absolutely fantastic. To be able to take that corner and put a hotel on it takes the uncertainty out of the situation for the people who live in Stratford Hall and in Springstone. As of right now, there are many, many things that could go there. A hotel is going to create one of the least amount of traffic of any commercial development. Their customers come and go maybe a couple of times a day, and that's it. And you're not going to fill those hotels up every day, more than likely, but I'm sure Mr. Patel will try his best to do so. The trees are very important to us and to our family. In fact, we own a tree farm where we're growing longleaf pines. It's a little further outside of Aiken than this that we're talking about. But those trees that the residents are interested in saving, we're interested in saving them also. That's how they're there. We did not cut them down when we harvested the timber on this site some 12, 14 years ago. We left that buffer there. We left a buffer across the front of Whiskey Road, and we left a substantial buffer between us and Stratford Hall subdivision, as the residents there can attest to. I've had several of them comment on how they appreciated that. There's some pine trees back there that's like that, and it's real nice, real pretty. So those trees are important to us too. I hope they stay there. They're mature trees. There's some big ones in there, and they're very, very handsome. This project will, right now, the city of Aiken gets nothing off of this site. Aiken County gets very little with this development, it will bring this property into the city, and it will generate substantial revenues. These are not cheap projects. These are nice projects, very nice projects. So as a lifelong city resident, I appreciate bringing property into the city, especially since we're looking after it already anyway. We've annexed Whiskey Road on out to Talitha Church Road, and so you're sending patrol cars by there. We're doing different things and all. Let's get some return on our investment. I think this will be a real asset to the city. The Holiday Inn Express is a well-known hotel franchise. Mr. Patel and his organization will have to adhere to strict standards in maintaining and operating the hotel. Mr. Dewar's concerns about the access road. We are big believers in interconnectivity. We've been to many meetings. This isn't the first time I've gone through planning department, the staff, with Ed Evans, and we've been to a lot of meetings. We know a lot about the regulations and the desires of the city, and concur wholeheartedly. We have had discussions about the rest of this piece of property with Ed and with Roger LaDuke before he left. When it comes down to what will happen with the rest of this property, you just don't really know what would go there. We anticipate and hopefully it would be some sit-down type family restaurant or several that might go in adjacent to the hotel. And if that's the case, then I'm sure Mr. Patel would want his hotel interconnected to that restaurant for ease of access, so that people don't have to get out onto Whiskey Road like they do now. When they come down Daugherty Road, you got to get on Whiskey Road, drive one block to get down back into the mall. That's a bad situation. Something that we don't want. When we get into developing the rest of this property, we realize that we will not be getting a Whiskey Road access for several locations or buildings on Whiskey Road. We don't know whether that rest of that property will develop in as one piece or smaller parcels. What we have talked with Ed and Roger in the past was to coordinate with the property across on the other side of Whiskey Road that y'all saw the diagram on, and to have the other entrance onto Whiskey Road to marry up with the entrance into that property across the street from us, if at all possible, so that you have the two roads abutting each other. And then that road would service two parcels on either side, or a shopping center of some sort, or whatever else may end up going there. But that will serve as a access road for the rest of this. I think it's very important to have the entrance onto Stratford Drive. I don't think it's going to cause the problems that has been spoken to tonight, because Stratford Drive grades out at A. It is not a heavily traveled road. I've been out there. I go out there fairly often. I've been out there walking over the property. I sat out there one afternoon for about an hour and watched the traffic come and go at 5:30. If you look at Stratford Drive, and I would encourage y'all to go out there and look at it if you haven't already. But it's a very wide road, and the reason it's wide like that is we sold the property, that roadway, to Palmetto Service Corporation back in the 80s, and they were going to use that road, that entrance road right there, was going to be their east gate entrance into Woodside. Then the mall project started, and they were able to access into Woodside by the mall, which was a better selection for them to right there, so to come right out at the mall. So that's why that road was built so big. It would not be that big if it had not been planned to accommodate much more traffic as the eastern entrance into Woodside. That was abandoned, and now it goes just into Stratford Hall and stops. So we have the benefit now of that having that nice wide road, and with the two entrances, it's going to disperse the traffic where it doesn't get clogged. It's going to allow people to come out at a traffic light, which everybody, when you're going on Whiskey Road, you like those traffic lights. Now, everybody that's going to be coming, unless you get stopped there for 3 minutes, but if you